Good morning, comrades. May we start? Good morning once again. Quite an unusual start today, but that goes on to prove the reasonable nature and accommodative character of this committee to make this for everybody here. National Commissioner, welcome. We welcome you back, remembering that our engagement earlier in the year was more on the performance audit of the Auditor General, and because of that we did not want to mix the issues. Today, however, it is the annual report that we want to engage the department on. We certainly were supposed to have had this engagement much earlier, but because of other challenges of government work, we had to postpone it today. We hope that you still have the energy to go with us through this this report. I'm sure, as you can see in the program, there are very, very few straightforward issues that we are going to deal with, and hopefully have an early morning. But as we start, if there's anyone that doesn't have a copy of the program, please do indicate. It will be made available to you. Alright, I suppose you all have copies of the program. By way of starting, we'll request the departmental officials led by the National Commissioner to introduce themselves and see the Auditor General's office is also represented, introduce themselves, then Member of Parliament, and then we'll then get into the content of today's engagement. Ba.
Chairperson, members of the SOPA, I am really sincerely grateful for the opening remarks of the Chair in accepting our initial apology for the engagement that we ought to have had a week or two ago. And indeed, we are grateful once again to be here with you after our meeting of the 15th of last month of March. Certainly, we also take cognizance of what you said, the peculiar way that the meeting starts today. Certainly, due to the flexibility and acceptability of this committee, which we sincerely appreciate. I am leading the team. My name is Tom Moyen, the National Commissioner for Correctional Services. On my right, on my left, I have the Chief Operating Officer, Ms. Nancy Kololo-Cholingana. On my right, I have Ms. Nandi Mareka, the Acting Chief Financial Officer. To the left of the Chief Operating Officer, we have Mr. Tebogo Mokoena, who is the Chief Deputy Commissioner for Human Resources. And next to him, I have Mr. Zakaria Modise, Regional Commissioner of Gauteng. And to the extreme, we have Mr. Terence Rasroka, who is the Acting Chief Deputy Commissioner for Strategic Management. Chairperson, we want to appreciate the engagement that we shall have today. With your indulgence and the requests that were made, we'll try to the best of our ability, especially on my side, to provide as much information as possible to engage robustly as we've done in the past. With those few words, I want to thank the Portfolio Committee for giving us this opportunity. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Commissioner. The Auditor General's Office.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Musa Tangwa. I'm responsible for the audit of the correctional services.
Thanks very much. Comrade, may we introduce ourselves? We always start in KwaZulu-Natal.
The best province in the country. Naren Singh, member of SCOPA. Thank you. Good morning.
Dion George, member of SCOPA. Chairperson, I was just wondering why the minister is not here. Thank you.
So we can deal with that once introductions have been done. You might find that he's sitting somewhere this side.
Senator Makakula, member of Correctional Services.
Chairperson, member of Correctional Services.
Sipongondisi, member of SCOPA. Good morning, Roy NG, member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Kabelo Chilwan, member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Winnie Ngwenya, member of Correctional Services. Thank you.
Good morning, member of SCOPA.
Well, if we're in my face, we would find
my voice. Mr. Chair,
morning, I'm Eunice Nyalongo, member of SCOP.
In my days as a teacher, I would rearrange the sitting arrangement.
I'm Leonard Max, member of DDS Portfolio Committee.
All right. Thank you very much, Comrade Tem Kodi. I chair the committee. National Commissioner, we did receive yesterday, and I think that's a challenge we always have, because it looks like it's always an afterthought, not only for correctional services, but even for other departments. Almost like another thought. You have a hearing on Tuesday, and on Monday afternoon, that's when you receive an email that says the minister is not available. It's almost as if they didn't know. And almost all the time, we're the ones who have to ask, is there no deputy minister in the absence of the minister? And we understand that the minister, please. We understand that the minister is held up in Durban. Some meeting or conference is attending, and on inquiry with the national commissioner, there has been communication from the Deputy Minister of Correctional Services that he is equally unable to be here. So that's the situation. I'm trying to respond to Dr. George, but I hope you heard me. Okay. All right. There's some big man from Canada who is here, so... No. I think a commission... You would note that this committee has engaged the department on on several occasions around the port of the Auditor General, and once again we were meeting over the same report. And over the years, the department has not been able to attain the kind of level or threshold that will say we are now moving towards a what we'll call a clean audit. And I think as a committee, we do not necessarily look forward to going through a ritual of having engagements once every year. But get a sense that our engagements assist in taking us forward. And I think whatever questions are going to be asked, at the end of it all, we must be able to say, how do we see value in this engagement? Or are we just going through the motions? And what is the value of the responses we get in relation to the challenges that the department face when year in and year out the challenges remain there? In some instances, they remain the same. So I think whatever might be asked, but maybe at the back of our minds, let's keep that and maybe let's have a sense that says to us, we at least are getting somewhere with this engagement. I think I would want that to be the overriding consideration at the end of the day over all the things that we'll be dealing with. I will hand over to Honorable Singh to deal with the areas of focus that have been allocated to him. Honorable Singh?
Chairperson, thank you very much. That wasn't me. Chairperson, thank you very much, indeed. Chair, I think...
Before you start, I hope we all have our cellular phones switched off. Please take your cellular phone, because for sure as the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, it will ring. And as we always say, even if it's on silent, for the time that it is ringing, whatever is being said is not recorded. So, please, switch off the cellular phone. I have mine off, first thing. So, just take your phone, switch it off. For this 1.5 hours or 2 hours that we'll be here. See?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think your introduction really gives one a sense of the hopelessness that we as members of SCOPA feel when we meet the Department of Correctional Services. Despair that, nothing much is happening. But hopefully we'll gain the next hour or two of some positive steps. And if I just have to use terms that they use, Chairperson, in the justice cluster, in terms of accounting parlance, we'd call them serial offenders with no hope of parole whatsoever when it comes to controlling their financial affairs and financial management. And, Chairperson, this is born out of the fact, like as you quickly said, the issues that have been pointed out by the Auditor General in this current report here are the same issues that we've been dealing with for the last 5 or 6 years. Chair, I'd just like to read from this document which I have here a summary of engagement we had not even 6 months ago, less than 6 months ago. Just a few lines. Inadequate audit management has been a consistent reason for the Department of Correctional Services receiving a qualified audit from the Auditor General. The committee had the department had recruited 400 interns for the purpose of asset verification in all DCS centers. The department had taken the decision to stop temporarily all interstore transport assets until the Logos asset control system could manage these. The Logos system would only be fully functional in February 2012. I'll stop there, Chair. But that's just a summary of the few lines of our engagement on the 28th of November 2011. So my first obvious question, Chair, will be, what has happened since then? What hope can we get
that something is happening with regard to managing assets. Because the bulk of the issues contained in this Audit General Report for the qualified opinion relate to movable assets, tangible, intangible assets, etc. And then also when that question is being answered, Chairperson, I see we have an acting CFO. I thought that there was a permanent CFO there for quite a few years. I'd just like to know, you know, just give us some background of the acting CFO that we have here today. Thanks.
All right. Commissioner?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We have taken note of the questions that have been directed to us, hopelessness that the SCOPA feels when it engages with the Department of Correctional Services, and that we are serial offenders in failure to be able to provide the change in terms of the audit opinion that has been given to the department over a number of years. Certainly we do take note of that, and I want to assure the committee that it's not all doom and gloom. We'll be able to predicate these reasons based on a number of issues. With respect to the inadequate management of assets, interstate transfers, logistics not being operational in the department, which will be able to help us in terms of the issues that we deal with. And then finally, the issue of the acting CFO. That is important to start with the latter. The CFO left the department on interdepartmental transfer in December 2012 to join the Department of Defense. Immediately after his departure, had an advert for that position to be in the newspapers from January. We need to indicate here that the types of responses that we have had were not been sufficient enough to give the department an ability to appoint, and therefore that has been re-advertised again. The CDCH will be able to elucidate extensively on this matter. It is not of our own design that we should be having an acting CFO. The chair will appreciate, and the portfolio scope committee will appreciate, that we did have a permanent person occupy that position. And it has been our leadership that have made it very clear that there should be no active position, especially at senior management, those who command authority in the department. Just before I stop on this matter, we also have an acting CDC on strategic management, which is a result of the promotion of our senior official, Mr. Jenny Schreiner, who was occupying that similar position of strategic management, and that post also was advertised. It is currently filled by Mr. Terence Alasroka, who sits in this committee this morning. Chairperson should be in a position to announce and the recruitment of the Chief Financial Officer and Strategic Management CDCs in due course, because that's the decision of the Minister who sits in the panel and the shortlisting, and that has been given to them. But as regards to other positions which are in my purview, doing everything in our power to fill those positions. Therefore, Ms. Mareka is acting CFO at this instance precisely because we want to fill that position, and we can assure the committee that that post will be filled. With respect to Logis, I want to put it on record, Chairperson, that Logis is a transversal system which resides in the National Treasury. It's not a departmental process, it's not a departmental system that we're using. In 2010-2011, we did indicate and engage with National Treasury and the Office of the Auditor General that the inability of Logis to assist us in terms of closing balances is a concern. The Auditor General in the meeting here will confirm that, and we were told in the meeting that National Treasury will be able to provide us with Logis that is functional, to be able to assist us, to be able to do what is expected of the Department of Correctional Services. In order for us to mitigate the risk associated with inability of Logis providing us with the possibility of dealing with financial matters, we informed Auditor General that we shall use a spreadsheet system, a manual system, in order to capture all the processes here. it is not at the department because there was no system that is helping us, but it did not take any measures in order to respond to this matter. The issue of inter-store transfer is also related directly with the non-functionality of lobbies in our environment. Therefore, it is different clothing balances, and therefore, when we use manual systems, these will not tally. I therefore want to put to the chair and the committee that the solution lies with National Treasury providing us with a decision that they have taken that they shall deliver on this matter. Until that time that National Treasury comes with a solution that addresses this problem, we shall invariably continue to have a problem. But certainly from an accounting and financial perspective, we do have a record that we are registering this on an annual basis using a spreadsheet system. The key issue which is fundamental, which Honorable Singh has raised, which I think we want to take ownership on, is the issue of assets, management of assets. Any department of its magnitude must be able to account for the assets that it has in its books. Now, indeed, in 2010, when this leadership took over and was in charge, we looked at this matter, which was part of the Auditor General's complaint with respect to continuous negative audit report. We then decided to recruit as quickly as possible in order to address. And honestly, though at that time it was a band-aid approach, the issue that I wanted to bring to the attention of leadership and managers within the Department of Correctional Service that assets are responsibility, not of finance, but of the whole leadership of the department. So that we should be able to account for each and every asset that is found in each and every office.
Let me go back to C, so that maybe we can talk to point the specific issues around assets.
Thank you, Reverend. I thank the Commissioner for the response. But we could also hear about 400 interns and also hear from National Treasury. See, fortunately, I'm speaking in a debate this afternoon on National Treasury, and I can raise this in the debate with the Minister directly, that we've heard from Correctional Services that National Treasury are partly the cause for this kind of audit report that they get with regard to the logo system. So can National Treasury are here, AG's office is here, because 5 years down the line, you might hear the same thing. If National Treasury hasn't done something, AG picks up. So we can just get a general sense on this matter from National Treasury.
I wasn't aware with people from National Treasury. That's why we didn't ask them to introduce themselves, but if they're here, well, better.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Sakafu, and I'm from National Treasury. We did speak to the DCS. Yes, they did come to National Treasury to discuss the matter with us, and that was taken up with the Logos team to make changes on the system. And they did make changes on the system because they gave the report saying that they made the changes on the system where they created the internal transfers report for both major and minor assets. And they've also indicated to us that they went and they trained the users within the DCS department. And they've also, this was done for the 2011-2012 financial year. And for the 2012-13 financial year, what they've done now, they've removed the internal transfers from the additions and disposals adjustments, and this was released on the 31st of January 2013. This was only done for January 2013, February and March 2013. And the last project that they're saying now they're still going to be doing is they're going to now try and match the internal store transfers with internal the internal store transfers in with internal store transfers out to aid with the audit when the DCS is being audited. However, as National Treasury, we were also of the opinion that there are some other internal control issues. Maybe the AG can also add on to that, where they found that maybe a store will transfer something out and another store will not receive those things. And we of the opinion that maybe, even if Logos is corrected, that those issues still need to be addressed, and Logos will not address such issues. And we have not had any feedback from the from the users where they've said that the logo system is still not assisting them after it has been corrected.
Okay, can we just hear the AG?
Yeah, can we hear from the AG? Just to understand exactly what is the nature of the problem or the challenge.
Thank you, Chair. It's true that Luke is still giving some problems as far as interstate transfers are concerned. But in our audit last year, we did find that the manual intervention by the department had also helped somewhat to reduce the extent of that problem. The other issues that really gave to the qualification as far as the assets are concerned were around the completeness of the assets, the existence of the assets, and the volition of both major and minor.
I think maybe we'll come to that. Let's leave that last part out and focus on the first part, which is about, you know, the internal transfer, which Logit is not assisting with. I want to revert back to thing, check if you want to follow up on the Logit before should I give the commissioner to respond?
But, no, I think the commissioner can respond after hearing the two colleagues. And just give us a sense that, well, that's why it's a hopelessness. I mean, what's going to be done? Can it be corrected? Who is going to correct it? Will these interventions help as we move forward? Because you certainly need to move from the spreadsheet system to a more electronic kind of system. No. This is going to be corrected by the time we set the correction services next year.
Thanks, Chair. And I would like to thank the colleagues who have made input. I was very clear and emphatic when I said Logis is resides within national treasury. And in the response that we got is that we don't have a full package that addresses the problems that we have. Now, in order for us to be able to be accountable for what we're being answered here, it is important therefore from DCF to have this process closed. Because if we're going to deal with this matter in a piecemeal approach, we'll be sitting again next year on the same issue. Certainly, being a transversal system, we need to have finality. That's our request. We know that it's not an easy thing from National Treasury. But if we are able to have a sense as to how this matter is going to be addressed, we have made a decision, a very conscious decision, that we shall not abandon the spreadsheet process until such time we have the full confidence of the system that it is functional. And therefore, the issue of interstate transfer also is predicated on the inability of the system to provide us. And it is important, therefore, that we put it here that, yes, we shall continue to have problems in terms of interstate and closing balances because we resort to two systems. We, as a department, want to have one system that is functional.
But Commissioner, this is the second time we're discussing, you know, internal transfers. So the issues and the problems we are raising are really the same as what we discussed a year ago or so. And our expectation was that more than a year down the line, we should not be dealing with the issues at a basic level, but more at the level of how have we arrested this situation? Because from what you're saying, it's like until such time that the transfer system has been changed completely to address whatever gaps that are there, we will continue to deal with this challenge. and I'm not sure if that is the message that we're saying. So that we say the issue around internal transfers of assets is going to be a continuous challenge.
Commissioner, thank you, Honourable Chairperson. If you go to the audit report for the year under review, the 2011-12, if you look at the comparative figure of that year, which is 2010-11, in those, if you look at the qualification itself, the asset qualification, mainly the department, in fact, only was qualified on the issue of interstores. So that was the qualification or the qualification for 2010-11. Correctly put by Commissioner, that's when the engagement began between the two departments and the department coming up with the compensating control to be able to deal with the system deficiency.
which, if you look at them in 2011, was what we then did, was to start the process as much as when we finalized the template and tested it. It was around July at the time of audit report, but what we then did was to go back to the 1st of April, which was the 2011, beginning of the financial 2011-12, to actually look at all interstore transfers that have been done between stores and the department to get the supporting documentation and to do the reconciliation in store. But if you look at the audit report, the qualification thereof, and if you add on to this, the qualification is not on the 2011-12 interstore transfers, in other words, transactions that happened during the year under review. It is a qualification because of the comparative figure of 2010-11. Now, in good financial statement, always you have a year that you're reporting on and always a year that you're comparing with, which is an immediate year before the year that you're reporting on. So in this case, we're reporting on 2011-12, but having comparative figures of 10-11. And 10-11 figures were qualified. Now, because in 10-11, we didn't go back with the manual system to 1st of April 2010. We went back to 1st of April 2011, and we then, as far as we could, did some adjustments, AC will verify and validate this, we did some adjustments to a comparative figure, but not all adjustments. And therefore, what AC brings to the attention of the public is that due to the fact that the comparative figure was qualified, and that's what they're explaining in paragraph 6 of the report, is the 10-11 comparative figure, not necessarily saying in 11-12, they are pronouncing or expressing a qualified opinion on interstores of 11-12. I think we may need to first distinguish the two for us to be able to
think
together. It did pay off the transition control.
No. Look, I think in relation to what I was asking, that's not material. I understand that. I think your point and your focus is on qualification. This did not lead to the qualification. But is it an issue that is resolved? That's the question. That's the point. Take away the qualification.
On the issue, Chairperson, if you're talking resolved in terms of what is the desired outcome of having a functionality, a module that will be able to assist in terms of the interstore as desired and as we expressed our own kind of task directives to the locus team. The answer to that is no. If you're sitting here, the answer is no.
I'm starting there. After no, moving forward, you go back and end it no. The answer is no. Then what? That's where I was. I thought that's the response that you should be giving us.
Would like to.
And my question was very simple. Because you say it's a traversal system that needs to be addressed holistically and not piecemeal. I said, are you suggesting, therefore, that we must now throw our hands and accept that this is going to be an ongoing challenge? I think that was my simple question.
Sure, we are saying there's not hopelessness in what we are saying here. The department will put every measure in order to address this matter. But what we are saying, the National Treasury must come with a complete system. They have made a commitment that shall be completed at a date and month and year. And that has not happened. And that is a problem. Dependence on a manual system is not going to be helpful, Chairperson. But we are not putting our hands on this matter. You are referring to that.
Maybe let's go back to National Treasury so that we have this declared. Because she said the functionality needed to be adjusted. They did that. They trained your personnel on it. So what is it that is actually lacking upon which there is a dependency to ensure completeness? I want to go back to National Treasury.
As I said, Chair, from our system developers, they said that they have adjusted the system to a certain extent. The only thing that now that's still outstanding is to try and assist the department to match interstore transfers in with interstore transfers out. That was done, and the users were trained, and we've never received any feedback on whether it has been done effectively and whether it's assisting the department. So they still need to come back to us and tell us if that's not assisting the department.
But as I also said, there are other internal control issues that departments needed to address in internal transfers within the department, because the AD has informed us that in some instances you'll find that there's an internal transfer out from one store and the other store doesn't receive. So that's an internal control deficiency. So the system will be adjusted, yes, but certain issues the department still needs to address internally.
If you say will be adjusted, are you considering that in its current form it is not useful, it's not helpful?
As far as we've been informed by the logger system, it has been adjusted, and the users have been trained. They even gave us training manuals that they did when they were training the users. I did forward that to Ms. Nandi Mareka. I think it was it last week sometime, where I gave her the stuff that logger says they have done the system.
No commission responded. I would like it to be the one who responded. No, there are two issues. Let's deal with two issues. One, that there are issues around assets being taken out and not being reported received at the other end. They have done some training on your personnel. You have not given feedback on that training, so that we're able to check whether we're having a systems problem or we're having a problem with the people who are supposed to use the system. Because it's not going to be an automatic system. It still has to be used by human beings. Do we have those people who are able to use the system? Yeah.
Chappers, with your permission, Julius, and respectfully, I would not want to get into a debate, but I'll respond to this matter in this manner. If we do a receipt in the interstore transfer and it's not registered, it's got to be purely operational. I'll tell you why, because I'll ask the Wiki Commission Mareka to respond to this. The functionality of, we are talking about 2013 February. We're in that financial year. 2013, this matter, Chairperson, has been a matter that we raised ourselves in 2010-2011. Precisely because of the problems that we anticipated. We are saying,
when did the training take place?
That's why I'm saying it's more operational. Mareka will be able to, she says Mareka was spoken to. If the training taken in February, therefore it does not address the problems. We are now in the financial year during the period of auditing. Now I'd like to know, as the accounting officer in this meeting, as to the nature of training, what is it that the system has helped us to deal with? Because if this has only taken bit now, it has consequences in terms of our inability to deal with the problems that we face. I am very frank on this matter, because I don't want us to sit here and discuss issues of aspect, to cast aspersion. I want to have a system that is functional. But we have said it very clear in this meeting, despite the deficiencies that we might have, the department has not sat back and said we are waiting for National Treasury. We have put systems, internal control measures, to address the problem that was brought to our attention. Until that time, the owner of the system provides me a holistic system. Because I always have this deficiency, because I'm giving a response on one part of the problem. When that problem solves, there's another one. I need to have something that is seamless. In terms of systems, I'm not owning that system.
No, that's fine. Maybe let's get through, Ms. Mike. When did the training take place that National Treasury is talking to? Well, what I want to check is whether the problem we're discussing here should have been resolved by that training, or the training that came after this report.
It's a training that came after the report, but okay. Also, what was the feedback that was given to the locus team was that the modifications that they have made, they still get on it. We do provide feedback. We do provide.
Was it verbal or in writing? The feedback.
My understanding from Cisco is that it was in writing to them. But you can follow it up.
And you follow it up and provide
from the systems
that communication, because then it will mean if indeed there was written communication to the logist team, but there are gaps in your system, and yet they reported to National Treasury that we have received no feedback, then it means there's a bottleneck somewhere that we collectively need to correct. Can we note that? We'll follow that one up. See?
Yeah, Chairperson, you know, while we note that there are some interventions in this regard, irrespective of the fact that the logos system is not fully functional, and we note that the spreadsheets, the interns and all have been doing some work. But you see, it is our duty here as COPA to be the arbiters between departments and treasuries and Auditor General Office. I submit it's not us. Surely they have interactions between themselves on a regular basis to try and sort some of these things out. I mean, it's happened in other committees that I serve on where we only hear at a committee when you ask the questions, the hard questions, that you are told, no, it's ban-ban and ban-ban there and that one and this one and that one. And, you know, the fingers start pointing at each other. I mean, these are things that need to be sorted out behind closed doors so that when they come to us, we are told, with this system, we've done 1, 2, 3. Next day, we won't have these problems. And, you know, that kind of thing. But it's not satisfactory that we hear this kind of debate, interdepartmental debate, at a meeting like this when we want more substantive answers. Having said that...
Or maybe I want to go back to the Auditor General. Maybe to hear from them, under the circumstances, what is it that the department... And I know if the department has asked that question, they will have got the same answer. And I know that the AG has quarterly meetings with the department. So if there are thick areas, these meetings are meant to actually clear those. So I would have been happier to have heard from the department that, yes, we have this challenge, but this is how we have engaged the AG to try and find a solution to this challenge. But I want, for the sake of the committee, to have a sense from where you are seated, what is it that the department may need to do under the current circumstances to ensure that this challenge of internal transfer does not have material misstatement, as indicated.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In our last year's audit, as the SPCO has alluded, we did not find material misstatements in the current year, that is the year that's being discussed now. But the material misstatement came from the editions of the disorders of the previous year. So we felt that the department was on the right track, still using the spreadsheet, you know, to address the problem while they were still working on the improvement on this. So if what has been said now has been well applied by the department, if the department has continued with the spreadsheet and also the training has been received, I think this problem should be resolved.
I think food for thought for National Treasurer. I don't understand how does National Treasurer procure a system that is incomplete? How does it happen that you procure a system that is incomplete and hand it over to department and it then has to be worked on system? All right, I wanted to continue, but
thank you, sir.
I'm just putting that as a question mark, because if that was not the case, I'm sure we would not have spent so much time on this issue.
I may get an answer from the Minister this afternoon, Chairperson, because
right.
I'm going to raise this in the debate,
okay.
Definitely.
Right.
It's current and fresh. But attending to the specifics, the AG has reported on page 103, item 8, and I quote, "I could, however, not satisfy myself with the completeness of additions and disposals to major, movable, tangible assets, since the adjustments made were materially misstated by an estimated amount of 47 million rand." Can we just get a comment from the department on that first aspect of the report, the misstatement by estimated amount of 47 million rand?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It's what one was referring to. This paragraph on the Auditor General refers to the comparative figure, which is 2010-11. For the year 2011, because it becomes comparative, because in 2010-11, we were qualified on interstate transfers, which means it's non-cash additions, non-cash disposals in terms of the asset notes. But then what we then did in terms of the control of spreadsheet, we went back as far as 1st April to start all transactions
to do them on the spreadsheet. We didn't go as far back as the 1st of April 2010. But what we, where we could, with the supporting documentation, we then went to go and do adjustments on the convertible notes. But we couldn't do all adjustments. Hence, AJ is then saying 47 million. If you look at the year before, that was, I think, about 200 and something million, the other one, 200 and something million. But that's still immaterial. So they're under review as a comparative because we were qualified on it. It's not something for 11, 12. It emanates from 11.
Sure. But then how do we then move forward? I'm sure you're in the middle of the audits right now. How will that paragraph look like when we get a report in August?
Thanks, Shepherdson. We're still continuing using the spreadsheet, so what we'll have in 2012-13 with a comparative of 11-12, so the other thing that one is comparative of 10-11, and all adjustments that we've picked up, we have detected. As a department, and we'll source supporting documentation from all centers and send things to also go and validate and verify that.
Finally, how will it look like? I think that was my question. Having done all what you have done.
Chairperson, from a spreadsheet perspective, we would say it's 100%, but if we have to juxtapose it with lawyers, we'd have a challenge where you would need to sit down and sharpen the pencils in order to have. We sincerely believe, all things being equal, that we shall, at one point or the other, reach consensus with Auditor General and National Treasury. The fact that we've agreed as two institutions that the spreadsheet system will continue, it also assists the lawyers still to sharpen
the
system.
We're not looking for you on what the ages of opinion should be on the matter.
Well,
asking for interest rate.
From our side, we believe that we should.
Okay.
Thank you. I suppose you'll give me the same answer if I ask you the question on the 10 million run that's referred to there in the thing. So I'm not going to ask the question. But just to say that there was an amount of 10 million run as well that the Auditor General has picked up.
Oh, can we check with the Auditor General? I mean, how then, because the comparative figures here is 2010-11 vis-a-vis 11-12. Now, if you use the same logic as the years go forth, how do you reach a final proper reconciliation of the comparative figures?
The qualification in the current financial statement being discussed now related to the figures here, that is the comparative figure.
So
going forward, when we report again, it will not count because it's the 2 years before. So we're going to look at this
here. No, it's fine. Let's leave it. We'll see. We'll talk to it in August somewhere.
Okay. It might clear this 1 year, but you'll get another amount coming in, which you'll have to ask questions of. So it's, as you move forward, you clear things. But you see, the next area of tangible capital assets, now, where they talk about the completeness and the existence. Now, this is a matter of concern. If the AG says, listen, I can't actually verify whether 20 motor vehicles or whatever that you had in your balance sheet as assets are really there or they're not there, and they give you amounts there and the disclosure notes. No. How do you go about assuring that if you have an asset in your books, that asset actually exists there, be it a motor vehicle or whatever other asset, computer or anything else? Are there systems in place? And why should the AG have picked up this kind of issue?
Chairperson, thanks. That refers to the point under major movable tangible assets. We want to assure the committee scope here that with respect to this particular aspect, we have put systems in place in terms of accountability of all assets in all the regions that we have these assets registered, so we should be able to respond to the completeness and the existence of these assets. What we've done. So we can assure the committee that asset management is the responsibility of all managers in the department, and therefore are following them, finance in particular, in their continuous quest in order to clear this matter, Mr. Singh. Because we have seen it as an indictment against the department for quite some time, that we deal with this matter once and for all. But certainly where we identify gaps, we create systems, especially what we have done is that the department is now looking for the recruitment and upskilling managers responsible for finance in the regional offices so that they could understand better, because you can only deal with this matter where people are becoming conscious and there's continuous education. Now, we can only deal with that once these measures are applied and the control measures are also put in place. So we can assure the scope that this matter has not been left unattended to. Thanks.
Chair, if I can, my memory serves me that I think it was Correctional Services where there was central procurement, and if they transferred an asset from the center to a depot somewhere else, then you had these challenges of it not being recorded. And we were told previously that something was being done about that, the way you manage the recording and where the asset resides, in whose books. I think it was Correctional Services. Commissioner, you're shaking your head. Can you just tell us how you've managed to deal with that?
Thanks, Chair. Since I've still transferred out, request that an elaborate response from operational perspective, Ms. Nan Mareka, to elucidate on this matter. Yes, it's a matter that we did raise with you.
That's what we're grappling with law is about. So it's the very issue we're talking to earlier. So there won't be any response different to what we've been dealing with for the better part of this morning.
That you're going to add to that, man. We must just accept that, yes, you're doing something about it, you think it's the right thing, and until Logos gets sorted out, then we'll probably read this paragraph again next year when we come here. Well, we don't know if we'll be here. Depends on the parties that we represent, whether we'll be here or not. Okay. Turning to
you'll be back soon.
Turning to minor movable tangible assets. The same thing there. Non-identification. Sorry, Jeff, for the interruption.
That's very important.
I think they want me for a quorum. At another committee meeting. They don't have a quorum there to approve the report of the committee on DPME. Turning to that, I see here again material misstatements on the minor movable tangible assets, physical identification. So I suppose we'll hear the same thing, Commissioner, that something is going to be done about it.
Can you repeat that last part?
Material misstatements, physical identification, 26 million rand of minor movable tangible assets.
We need to hear different response. Physical identification, that surely should have nothing to do with logging.
With your permission, I'll repeat this. I did indicate that we have teams that have been identified within the finance sphere who deal exclusively also with issues of asset and asset management. The misstatement and verification of assets is a repository of everybody, as I said, within the department. And we feel and sincerely believe that it should be something that does not appear again here. Because once you have systems in place and you have assigned accountability in terms of asset management, what the Auditor General has indicated that the completeness verification is something that we should, as a department, be able to account to. And therefore, I must say that it's something that we are addressing. It's something that is continuous, and we feel in the current audit process, it would not be possible to repeat it.
We'll mark that one down and take what the report says.
Yeah, Chair, moving forward. Then on restatement of corresponding figures and the details on page 149 and comparisons of 10-11 and 11-12. Now, the Auditor General says that figures for March 2011 have been restated as a result of an error relating to non-disclosure of lease payments by the Department on state-owned property as operating lease commitments. What can you tell us about that?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. What has happened is that as government departments occupying the buildings that by mandate belong to the Department of Public Works, So on the devolution of funds to departments, the amounts that were appropriated to the respective departments and DCS, we have the earmarked funding for that. Now, what happens with the earmarked funding for occupation of government buildings is that as government departments, then public works will bill exactly the same amount that has been appropriated back. So in terms of what is termed as occupying or leasing the state-owned buildings, which is our correctional facilities in the main and our management area offices, where we are not leasing those from outside landlords. Now, the money that is paid back to public works is for the maintenance, specifically if you look at the devolution document of, I think, 2005-2006, is for the maintenance of the government-owned buildings. So in our discussions with AG, we say from when we're sitting, that is not a lease commitment. It is money for the maintenance of buildings. In terms of
by the time you finish your explanation, I'm locked. Don't tell us what you discussed with the AG, because if you didn't convince the AG, you are not going to convince us differently. I thought, in my mind, I thought it's either a material non-disclosure of amount spent, or is a question of wrong classification. It's either of the two, or if it's not, then say what it is and how do you sort it out.
It has been sorted out, but remember, one day to e-background to that, because in the report of AG, it's very clear that the department will receive the figure. So his question was mainly what happened, so I was answering that question. That we have already sorted it out, we've restated the 2011 figures and the comparative there.
Okay.
It was the background that was up.
Alright.
Chairperson, this is Kev Ball. Your relationship with public works at correctional services, in terms of maintenance, you spoke about maintenance of buildings, etc., etc. Because I've received reports that sometimes simple things that are faulty inputs. You say you've got to wait for public works and they might take 6 months to come along there and repair it. Isn't there some kind of arrangement where you can apply for special dispensation to repair things that are absolutely essential yourselves or your own team in some of your facilities?
This is a company-wide problem, but I must indicate that we have meetings with the new Director General, who has just joined the department. The meeting seek to look into areas wherein we could have clearances and dispensations given to us in order for us to help them to manage this huge money that they have. Certainly, the meeting has not taken place. We had one, and given the nature of the issue that the DG had, the next meeting is going to take place in June. So we hope we'll be able to have some areas wherein we'll be able to give them some sort of direction to deal with the issues.
Okay. I'm sure we'll encourage that once we hear your responses to some of the questions Comrade Shaw is going to raise vis-a-vis how then if you are given those responsibilities. Okay.
Yeah, Logan is a very famous person. Infamous person. Chairperson, the question of his interns, you had some interns, Commissioner, 400 interns he told us, to try and deal with this asset verification. Are they still there? Are they not there? Just going back a bit now. I'm coming to employees' compensation, so I'm just trying to...
They're still there, sir.
And are they still serving a useful purpose, the 400 interns?
They do, Chairperson. They serve a useful purpose.
That's good. Right, now looking at under expenditure of about 893 million rand from your original plans to what you actually spent, and I note that about 400 odd million run was utilized for what Parliament did not approve. And this committee, I think, recommended that we did not approve last year the writing off of that amount, or Treasury to give them additional money. So you utilized some of your current budget there, 400 some odd million, but you're still underspending. And there are areas in which you are underspending. And those areas have been identified on page 81. Of the port, on your compensation of employees, on goods and services, on buildings and other fixed structures. I mean, those are the three areas. Now, can you tell us firstly about
the compensation of employees and the underspending in terms of employees. Because a lot of your problems here are on not having sufficiently trained people within the financial management sector of the department. What are you doing and why did you underspend on these posts not having been filled? Thanks.
Chairperson, with your permission, with respect to underspending in terms of compensation of employees, which is the warm bodies that we need in the department, goods and services and building and services. Firstly, I would like, therefore, that we concentrate on compensation of employees, which is key and critical. The staff complement in the department plays a pivotal role in the core office of business. Now, in the year under review, having assessed the need for us to be able to fill the posts that were vacant, it was found that it is expedient for us to be able to fill all those posts. But given the time lag that we have in terms of recruiting the requisite skills, the training that takes place in the colleges, and we could not be able to fill the posts at the time required. And that's what was important for us to indicate in the report that we also came here to SCOBA last year on the 483, which we had a debate, and the matter was left to us to discuss with the Auditor General, National Treasury, and we can report that that matter has been resolved and we're given the permission to go ahead in order to pay from our own savings for the differences that were not paid in the department. But with respect to goods and services, I want to indicate that...
Sorry, Commissioner, can I just finish off the compensation of employees thing? You see, there's always a problem between savings and underspend. Lots of departments say we save money, but really they underspend. So, I mean, 483 million run was unauthorized. It was declared unauthorized. Some services that you had planned in that year must have suffered. What are those services that suffered in that year? Because you have to now readjust and use 483 million run. And while you're there, you seem to have some kind of agreement with CETA, service level agreement with CETA, because that's mentioned on page 96. Underspending delays in finalizing service level agreement with CETA for IT projects. Can you speak to that as well? While you're dealing with employees.
Thanks, Chair. With respect to compensation of employees, I'll therefore request that we deal with that through the HR personnel. Additionally, to the issue of our relationship with CETA, it's a matter that we have discussed extensively. Projects that have not been completed timeously, projects which predate this, because there have been projects that have been in the books for the last 5-6 years, and with projects, we see it as what you call subcontracted services to be completed for the provision of architecture for the department. That in itself is an issue that we came to the portfolio committee, I'm not sure whether as co-author also, that we need also to deal with the issues related to the inability to provide services in the department. And that in itself led to the discussion that we had here about consultants in the Department of Correctional Services. Which in itself was a problem in the sense that not as well consultants, warm bodies, but in terms of the completion and the execution of the plan that were on the table, those issues were not addressed. So I am saying, not as there was a need for us to be able to recruit to be within the department, the other component that has an effect is the usage of consultants in order to fill posts for activities that we as a department could have dealt with correctly.
I don't know if you're in a passionate one about CETA. We've had the CETA problem before with the department and the service level agreements and so on and so forth. That's also, I mean, it's another spending area. But if we move on to the goods and services, I mean, there's one specific item that's been referred to by the AG, and that's the remand detainees, the uniforms. I would think that you would tell us that uniforms have been acquired and everything on track in terms of that spending. That's on page 81. Right at the bottom, and 1.4.
Thank you, Chair. We did request a rollover for the remand detainee uniform, but unfortunately, in the year 2013, that could not materialize as well because of a misleading information that the awarded bidder provided. This is the subcontract that is adjudicated in the National Treasury, and then legal opinion was sought, and the contract was terminated. So we had to go back again to tender, and the tender was then awarded effective 1st of April 2018. So it's going to be occurring in the 2014 financial year.
Good, thank you. Buildings and other fixed structures. Now, there are lots of details here, and I'll just run through some of them. Starting on page 82, security fencing, 150.887. Now, security fencing, the Auditor General says you've taken some actions or you're avoiding a recurrence. I understand a lot of these fences are still not being completed. I understand in one prison that it's not the prisoners that are being fenced in, but the guards are being fenced in as well. And I'd like to know why that's happening, not too far away from here, one of your very big prisons. But there's huge walls that are being put around so that the guards who guard prisoners are being guarded from people who don't conceal from them outside. That's Portsmouth Prison. I mean, why are these kinds of things happening, and why did you underspend on the security fencing?
So the fencing project, as reflected, taken over by IDT, first I'll be able to verify personally together with the Chief Financial Officer as to the statement that they are fencing everybody in. Be as it may, being a prison, you need to have security across the whole facility. But the primary objective of fencing in facilities is to keep the prisons or the correctional centers in a secure so that the inmates are not able to effect any escape. But in any prison, anyway, there is what we call perimeter fencing, which is also part of infrastructure of any facility. So I'm not sure as to which part is being referred to. But be as it may, there are two components. There's perimeter fencing, which is for the whole facility, including defending and giving provision security for all officials. Secondly, is what you call fencing, which reinforces the correctional centers where inmates are kept. But in all instances, there is a cost element that is related to this. In the current contract that we have with IDT, the perimeter fencing is for the prisons, the inmates. So I will need to verify which, but in BS it may, you might find that the Portsmouth Prison that you're referring to, the perimeter fence might part of the scope. The fence might have gone for years. The same is if somebody drives around Johannesburg prison next to Sun City, the so-called Sun City, there is nothing for a number of years there. And therefore there is internal processes of providing security perimeter fence and also fencing around the prisons themselves.
Thank you. If you come to Johannesburg, you want to understand that the EIA sometimes do take a bit long, so I think the reasons for the fund not spent in 2011-2012 can be quite justifiable. But then when you go into Zanin, I mean, it's just unacceptable that a contract is awarded to somebody and that they can't get windows and they can't get metal doors, and this causes such delays in these projects being completed. What is being done to ensure that, you know, when a contract is awarded, and in many other instances here, you'll find, I think, it's from Rainstock and then say this. I mean, contractors that were originally engaged were not found to be suitable to have taken on that job. Now, who awards these tenders? Why are they awarded to these people? What kind of checks are done in terms of the work they have completed before? Generally, Commissioner, thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In terms of construction projects and the rehabilitation of infrastructure, major maintenance, all procurement processes are solely done by the Department of Public Works, nationally and also at national level.
What is the role of correctional services in the process?
The department, what we do is to provide specifications of what we need to engage them on those specifications. But in terms of then the procurement processes, and they then take over once the specifications have been finalized with the department.
So if you have to ask questions about public works, I think these are things we need to note, Chairperson, as a committee, because you know, we can have a whole list of things that we need to ask public works, and we, for example, these specific examples that impact the department, and maybe our secretariat must just write these down, because it will apply to many other departments other than correctional services. Or we can write to them and say specifically on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, tell us what's happening, because you're, you know, this is having problems here. So because over here you say of the auditor general says of the challenges are faced on with regard to public works, slow progress and implementation of planned projects. On machinery and equipment, the net underspending was mainly as a result of saving on the procurement of body scanning equipment, which was not finalized before the end of the financial year. Has that been finalized and is it being used and did you get value for money?
Yes, Chairperson, the procurement process for the body scan equipment has not yet been finalized. So we haven't done any procurement on that one.
The funds, is it rolled over from last year to now? How much was it meant?
Even for the 11-12, in terms of the requested rollover, there were no rollovers that were approved by the rollover committee. We haven't done any rollover. But we would have to, if once all processes are finalized, we have then to look at our machinery and equipment reprioritization processes and look on that.
Just to add what the CFO has just said, what is also at the center of the body scanning is the issue of health and safety in the technical specification, because you are dealing with body scanning equipment. And therefore, we need also to deal with the issues of compliance. Besides above each and everything that we do. So it's, we also need to indicate that. So we don't want to bring equipment that is non-compliant, much as it's a standard procedure internationally used of body scanning in correctional facilities.
Commissioner, yeah, now without this equipment, which I feel is very important, because from what we read and the things that go in and out of prisons, they're quite alarming. Firearms, drugs, and all sorts of things are moving in and out. So one would think that this is something that's urgently required by the department to ensure this, the movement of these illicit drugs and whatever doesn't take place. People have died in prisons through firearms that have probably come from outside.
Sure, we can confirm you without any measure of contradiction that in the financial year that we'll be starting, this equipment will be installed in our facilities. Because what has delayed is a whole process of analysis, as I've said. Taking into account the contraband that is taking place, cell phones, knives, this and that, which is a major concern in all correctional facilities, because if you don't have that type of technology and have that at our disposal, we run the risk of having the centers being run by inmates themselves. So if taking official decision that all measures and all processes should be attended to, we shall be able to have this in the financial year that we shall be starting without any contradiction to that.
So, Chair, I think what you're hearing, if we go to prison, we won't be safe in prison because of all these people handling all these firearms and drugs and everything. Chair, I think I've done the overall general thing on the issues that I was asked. Maybe colleagues can follow up questions. Thanks, Chair.
All right. That's fine. Maybe let me allow Memangen to deal with the part. Yes. Predetermined objective. We'll come back to that. I just want us to run through the issues and then allow comrades to come back on any other follow-up.
Okay, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Mine is on predetermined objectives. There are those issues of consideration. We have realized that the Auditor General has reported findings on the predetermined objectives for the past financial years. The past financial years will go to 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, I'm sure. And then especially on the area of usefulness and reliability of information. My question will be, what is the validation process in place to ensure that the information reported from correctional centers to management areas and then to regional offices is accurate and complete? If there are controls, why AG's office report has got said that there are discrepancies every year? Every year he comes to you, he finds that there are problems and looking into all those things. the information that is reported from you sent to the regional offices. There are some things that really don't make him happy. Why is it there?
No, it's fine.
I think.
We will respond to that, Commissioner.
Chair, with your permission, I have a team that I've brought here. I could answer, but I would like that request, that answer be answered extensively. I don't want this committee to get half-baked responses, half-measured. I'll request the Chief Operating Officer to give you a response in this matter so that we dispense of it, so that the member of SCOPA is able to have a sense of appreciation as to what we're talking about here. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members, and thanks, Commissioner. Maybe it is important to acknowledge that, yes, there are gaps in terms of the information that we receive. Some of it is system-related challenges that we're experiencing. It is very difficult for some of our centers who are not necessarily connected to the network to be able to provide the information. On some, you rely on the manual system, while on others, you rely on the electronic system. So there were indeed areas where we have challenges in terms of the information and validating that information and all that. We agreed with regional commissioners that even in areas where the electronic system is running, we should not as yet go away with the manual system so that we are able to compare the information that you get and are able to ensure that there's consistency in terms of the information that you receive. So, yes, there are gaps in terms of you would fax something to Lusikisiki and yet the fax machine in Lusikisiki is not working. So those are the practical problems that we are experiencing on the ground. But one should confirm that we are addressing those issues, because we are saying also people in management areas and regional offices, their job is not to sit and wait for reports. Their job is also to go out there and ensure that information is captured properly and correctly, and that information is provided where it needs to go. So we are trying to address those challenges that we are experiencing in terms of the inconsistency of information.
Chairperson, let me just thank you for what you said, but I'm really not happy about that, because I know sometimes that is the head office that is not making follow-ups on these things. People will report to you to say that our fax machine is not working, especially in rural areas. Our fax machine is not working, our telephone landlines are not working, and then we don't supply the most cell phones. Even if the cell phones are there, still there's no network in such places. And the duty of the head office to say to is that all those regional offices really, they also have information that also could be sent back to you and inform you. Thank you, Chairperson.
How do we have a non-functioning fax as a major problem that should lead to a finding by Auditor General? Is it that difficult or tedious to replace or fix a fax machine that is non-functioning? I know that's an example, but, well, you chose that example, and so I will use it. But can we really sit here and talk about fax that is not functioning, and it has then led to all these discrepancies that lead to a finding?
Perhaps, sir, let me come to complete what the COO intended to say in using that example. In the main, here we talk about systems that have failed, but just allow me to reflect a bit here. And perhaps that should be another area of discussion, especially on the question raised by Mangena. Systems in the Department of Correctional Services for a number of years have not been functional.
Now, when I'm saying that not been functional, is that you need to have a highway where information is exchanged between regional offices and HQ head office. Now, you recall that we have what is called an ARDOMS, and the system which would provide the Department of Correctional Services with an ability and capability to disseminate information, record the acceptance of offenders and the release of any other statistical processes. That system has not been functional for a number of years. It is a matter of investigation which we did indicate here. It is part of the FIFA program that we have, and therefore it also goes down deep into the issue of alignment of our strategic plans, our programs, and that in itself, as you rightly say, it is not, we should not be reliant on the systems. But HQ members should also be taking the foot, going to the regions themselves and verifying this information. We can say this, as CEO has indicated, in the forum of those who are responsible for regional programs and co-face of business, there is a core of decisions that the regional managers, the center managers, head of centers, will have to file information on a daily basis based on a system that is available. What we can confirm today, that we have a system that gives us on time, live, information about all the offenders in our facilities, both remand, sentenced, and those who are on parole. Now, that itself indicates that the department has done measures to put measures in place to be accountable for all the inmates that we have. The discrepancy that is being indicated here is a result of systems that were not functioning in the past. We are addressing that. We consider that there has been gaps. Now, the use of the FAS was just an example that we should not just sit back because the FAS is not working. And therefore, the regional manager or the head of the center should make it possible that if that FAS is not working, quick call and say verified information may be sent in one way or the other. But we should not have information that is unverifiable, because if we do so, we always lament and say the systems are not working. So managers have to work outside the box. So if this is not working, another system has to be implemented. That's the bottom of the matter.
Okay. Mr. Muyani, this really, I believe, worried the office of the AG. Because what they actually say is that this has been happening for a long, 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 long time. The systems have been down for a very, very long time. Do you mean that if now, if I can go to Herschel, will I get proof right there? Will they give me all the information that I want now, as I'm talking now?
And I can say yes, many of you will have that information. Perhaps, with your permission, why I use an example of statistical data. We are an institution that deals with numbers. We deal with numbers. We count people. Day in, day out, how many people came out, how many were released. And therefore, it is important that we, the senior managers, should be able to speak to you from a position of confidence of the details that we have. So if we don't hold those who are at the core face of business in giving us the correct figures, we'll not be able to provide that information. So HSO will have to create systems outside what might not be functioning for us to be able to have the data available.
Thank you, Chairperson. The other one is technical indicator descriptions. Were designed to ensure that the reported information is consistent throughout the department. What process was used to compile TIDs to ensure that circumstances of the correctional centers are accommodated? Has the department tested these TIDs to ensure that indeed they lead to consistency of reporting performance information? I'm saying just like that one, but this one is a little bit tricky.
No, it's not tricky. They will answer that one. Very
I would like, with permission, that the acting CDC strategic management provides the member with a full description as to respond to that question. With your permission, Mr. Rasarok.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. In terms of the technical indicator description, it's a requirement from a planning point of view. We have to clearly define what we have set as our targets in the third plan. And I think we have acknowledged the fact that the 2011-2012 plans, which we are reporting on the current annual report, have been having challenges. We clearly indicated and have actually picked up that the alignment of both the strategic plan, the ADP, the operational principle did not have a flow. So in the absence of a flow, you just have a challenge in terms of establishing the technical indicator description that actually talks to those specific things. We're concerned we had those TIDs, but those TIDs were not actually talking to the actual operations that was in place in our plans. And on that note, we, after realizing that weakness, we actually had to start improving that in our, like if you look at our current plans, there's a clear alignment of those TIDs with our target. But for that particular financial year in review, there was indeed a challenge in terms of alignment of those TIDs.
Okay. What process is in place to ensure that findings issued by AXA during the year on accuracy, completeness, and validity on information and quarterly reports addressed before the preparation of the annual performance report?
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Member. When we get the findings of the AG, we compile action plans in order for us to be able to address that. And therefore, we believe that we will be able to address, and those action plans are also monitored in the department through our own quarterly reviews. We need to make sure that we also report on those action plans.
Chairperson, I'm a little bit worried. If AG didn't discover this, it means that you people wouldn't have discovered it. Because it's only after AG came to you that you realized that these things were not working. Now you are going to make sure that they start working now.
Chairperson, I need to concede to the frustration of the member and happiness. But we also need to take into account that the Auditor General has an overhead role that draws our attention to some of the gaps that they may identify. And based on the gaps that they identify in the department, it's our responsibility, therefore, to have an action plan to address the discrepancies and the gaps that have been identified. In that context, not necessarily because the AG has not drawn our attention to this matter, or not, because in a quarterly review process, we do an introspection as to where we are, what needs to be done, and what measures we need to put in place. We can confirm that we have continuous quarterly review. Every quarter, at the end of the quarter, we sit down and do an assessment. There might be areas that we are not well in front of, and therefore, Auditor General will bring this to our attention, and it's our duty, therefore, to deal with those aspects that are under our attention by the Auditor General.
I know,
Chairperson,
is always on our side. I understand you. I know that. Yeah, I know it. It is going to work on, you know, he's going to be arrested, not long. Not long he'll be arrested. So then they'll take care of you. Okay, in the prior year report.
I didn't hear that. Continue with
the question. Okay, in the prior year report, the department did not achieve a significant number of health targets. That is 47% of it. What did the department do to solve this issue, as this is an indication of inadequate service delivery? Despite having spent over 97% of your budget, how possible is this? How does it affect budget?
Now I request Mr. Titus Osoroka to respond to this, to give effective response to this.
Thank you, Commissioner, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. In terms of the non-achievement of targets, I think I need to share with honorable members of the committee that for the past couple of years, we've been experiencing problems in terms of our planning process. The strategic plans, the annual improvement plans, as well as the operational plans that we had, they were misaligned.
Well, they still are in terms of the report.
Yes. Actually, the corrected one, Honorable Chairperson, is the one that's aligned with the current plans, the 13-14 financial year. But prior to that, we had misaligned plans. So our strategic plans were not talking to annual performance plans and they couldn't talk to the operational plans. Hence, they were not also aligned to the budget of the organization. So that disjuncture clearly created an environment whereby an organization were unable to achieve on things that we said or that we have targeted to achieve, but precisely because we were not very clear in terms of what are our strategic imperatives, and based on those imperatives, what then do we translate into our annual performance plans. And precisely, it has been a continual process. When we tried to intervene at some point, there was an indication that we could not change our plan during the electoral period, which is the five-year period. But since the end of last year, we actually had to get to a point of saying that we are going to change, we are going to align our plans so that we can be able to deal with matters that really affect us and deliver on those. So in terms of the percentage achieved there, with the goals that we had in 11-12, we had about 123 targets. And out of those 123 targets, we only achieved 57 targets, which translated into 47% of achievement. And precisely because, honourable member, it's clear that we were not very much clear in terms of what we needed to achieve as an organisation. We have identified that weakness, we have corrected it, and as I was saying, in the current plan, we are actually sitting with 50 of 100 targets. We're sitting with clearly defined 39 targets, which clearly defines our business processes and are actually responding to the challenges that the organisation is going through. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. What controls are there in place to ensure that targets included in the APP, as you are saying, and strategic plan are achieved and the non-achievers are held accountable? Is that going to happen?
It will be, honorable member. In the current plan, what we have done is that certainly the business managers are responsible for the targets that they are sitting with. They've significantly contributed to the development of those targets. They've clearly outlined what needs to be achieved. They translated those targets into their annual performance plans, and they've also aligned those annual performance plans to their operational plans. And their individual managers in those branches are responsible for specific outcomes of their particular. So as strategic management and as an organization, we are from a quarterly review session. But one of the things that we do, we use quarterly review sessions, mid-year type review sessions, where branch managers come and account to the accounting office and to all their colleagues in those sessions about their performance against the set targets. So that is basically one of the key control measures that we are putting. To say that manager X, this is what you said you will achieve in the first quarter. How far are you in terms of your achievement? If you haven't achieved, what mechanisms do you put in place to ensure that you actually achieve to close that gap?
How do you verify the quarterly report achievement?
What we do, honorable chairperson, we get the reports as raw as they are. We do an analysis of the reports against set targets, but more importantly, we look for evidence. So one of the things that we are putting in place in terms of the current plan is to insist on the performance of evidence of each and every target that actually comes in. We did not have that, but when the strategic management was starting to put in place templates that are consistent across the organization that talk to each and every indicator that will verify that this is an evidence to say that you have achieved based on what you're saying.
Okay.
Thank you, Sir President. In prior year report, the AG reported that indicators in the strategic plan do not correspond to indicators in the annual performance report. How did the department address these discrepancies? I know you are thinking about it now, but I just want you to put it really clear to us so that we are really clarified on that.
Thank you, honorable member. Yes, indeed, our targets, our strategic plan targets, were not aligned to our annual performance indicators as well as the operational plans. There was a disjuncture. So clearly, anybody else will tell you that if the plan is incorrect, you are just not going to be able to implement what you're sitting on the plan.
But how does it escape you if it's as obvious as you make it sound? How did it escape the department all along?
I think, honorable chairperson, there was a contestation of what is strategic versus what is operational?
Contested by who?
Within the organization. I need to also say that the organization and the history of the organization in terms of planning was that the planning was centralized in a specific business unit without the involvement of relevant managers.
But there's leadership in the department. How do you have endless contestation when somebody is supposed to give the final word in terms of this is what should happen?
Yes. Sometimes I think a month of this last year, or year before last, the National Commissioner had actually intervened. He has clearly indicated that the current way of doing training in the organization is inconsistent with how training is done in our government department. So he actually made sure that he made a stop to this training that is done by individuals in the organization.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Listen, thank you. Can I rest my case?
Okay, come to Joy.
Thanks very much. I will deal with the remaining pages of the AG's report that Mangan has not dealt with, that Mr. Singh has not covered. But first, as usual, we would like to have engaged with the Audit Committee's report. Now there's no one here from the Audit Committee. Why is that? Is there somebody here from the Audit Committee?
Very good.
Thank you.
Okay.
Chair, we're a bit disappointed with the Audit Committee report. It doesn't really give the kind of detail we want. And I think if you want a very good example of an audit report is the one we had last week. Was it not? Home Affairs. Home Affairs. Look through that Home Affairs report. It gives the kind of detail that assists our committee and I'm certain would also assist the department. A kind of detail regarding especially internal control. But there are one or two questions I wanted to ask about the report on page 78.
Yes.
Audit Committee report is on page 78. First of all, that table is not very helpful. Very useful to know who attends meetings and who doesn't attend meetings. And so if you look at that table, one doesn't quite know whether, for example, Advocate Madhumisa, the chairperson, who has attended three meetings, special meetings and three ordinary meetings, whether that's good or bad. Is that 6 out of 6 or is it 6 out of 9 or what is it? At the very bottom of that table, Ms. Paponyan has only attended one meeting. Now I'm sure that could be determined by their date of appointment. But it would be useful for the layperson who looks at the table. If you can give an indication of how many possible meetings there were during that period. So it's 1 out of 9, 1 out of 1, whatever. So we can get a better indication of who is attending meetings and who's not. What impressed us with Home Affairs was that there was an absolute 100% attendance of all those three members of the Audit Committee. Chair, then the second thing I wanted to raise from the Audit Committee's report is under internal audit. I see that the internal audit function was assisted by a consortium under PricewaterhouseCoopers and Sekela. Now, could you tell us a little bit more about that consortium? Why were they necessary? Why was it necessary to bring that consortium in? Perhaps you can start when were they appointed? When was this consortium headed by PricewaterhouseCoopers assist in the internal audit function? When were they appointed?
Chair, through you. The audit consortium was appointed some time in the middle of last year. That's when they were appointed to start with the internal audit function. The reason why we have...
The middle of last year, you mean June or you mean August?
Chairperson, I don't have the exact dates.
No, it's fine, I just want a month. You say middle of the year.
Beginning of the year, middle, you say middle of the year.
Yeah.
Middle of the year.
But once we want to do is to assess whether in fact we receive value for money from this consortium, so it's very useful to know when did they start their work. But let's leave that for now. So more or less mid-year last year.
Yes.
What are you paying them?
The budget for internal audit fees is 7 million rand at the moment.
Not internal audit.
The consortium, the internal audit consortium is sitting at 7 million.
Okay, what are they required to do?
What do you expect them to do?
The department in terms of internal audit work that needs to be carried out. The internal audit department at the Department of Correctional Services is currently on staff in terms of the coverage that they have to achieve. So we rely on the resources from the internal audit consortium to support our objectives.
But why are you not appointing your own internal people, building your own internal capacity? Why are you outsourcing what I regard as a very, very important function for the department itself? Internal audit is a core function, in my view, of the department's activities that you are busy outsourcing. Why don't you find your own people and build your own capacity?
Mr. Ensley, at the current moment, unfortunately...
Honorable Ensley, sorry.
Okay. Yes. The department... one of the intentions of the consortium is actually achieve equity that so that when the consortium actually goes out, it will leave the department in a state where it will actually function by itself as an internal audit function.
How does it achieve that when it is not?
I think the accounting officer would also like to say something.
Yeah.
I just want him to clarify the point he's making. I'll keep accounting
office. Oh, okay. So
this is the internal audit function is under staff. That's why we need external people. But it says the recruitment of the external auditors is exactly to capacitate the department.
Mm-hmm.
How they achieve that?
How would they achieve capacitating the department itself?
One of the intentions is that as skills level agreement, they're supposed to upskill the department's internal audit department. That's one of the intentions and that's one of the agreements that the department has with the internal audit consortium.
Okay, that's part of the transfer bill is part of the contract.
Yeah.
All right, National Commission.
Thanks, Chair. Honourable Ends, the question is... Honourable Ends, the question that you raised is that poignant in the sense that we need to give you a perspective to this. Prior to 2010, when we assumed the responsibility of the department, it came to our attention that our internal audit was not well-resourced and understaffed. And was not pitched at the requisite position. One then could appreciate why they had outsourcing of this particular function, which, as you rightly say, is very essential and critical in the department. But also it leads to other factors in terms of our ability to be able to have audits that are requisite to what is expected of us. Now, in 2010-2011, we made a conscious decision that we need to be able to resource internal audit and also to reduce the reliance on external services that were providing support. Because in all instances, upon perusal of the reports, there was no what is called skills development. They were there, we paid a certain amount of money. There was no skills transfer. And that in itself was a problem that we felt we could not continue with. Second to that,
so have you been relying on external service providers to perform this function for a number of years?
Well, what answers that question, Honourable Ends, is that with this under-resourced unit, and therefore in order to put what you call a crisp, you have other people coming into that space. Well, that's what decided.
It worries me that if this has been going on for a number of years,
why
over those periods of time you have not been able to capacitate your own internal staff. And still today, we discover you are still relying on external service providers. So what have you been doing all of those prior years about building capacity in the department?
Chair, I said the previous outsourcing did not build capacity. I just want to make that there was no skills transfer and capacity development in the department. Post 2010, 11, and 12, we decided that we need to upgrade the position of your internal auditor, the head of the internal audit unit, to that of the chief director, to a chief director. All along the number of years, it was at director level. With very few people who were capable of running a department in a budget of this magnitude. It became also important that much as that we return for some time the outsourcing, the oversight and responsibility lies with the chief director responsible for this position. And that was a turning point in terms of what we have achieved. What the internal audit chairperson is saying is that, given the fact that historically we did not have quality in the organization, we had to retain this by the same time diminish the role of the outsourcing process. At that time, we can to consider there is no way that we are going to have a situation that we turned our organization around. We are taking what in the report that we received from the previous outsourcing, we made it very clear that there was no value for money. And that way, I think, in the current outsourcing that we have put together, the terms and the conditions of that outsourcing are very clear. That this should be done, that even by the time that contract ends, there shall be transfer of skills and there shall be no reliance and dependence on outsourcing.
That anticipates my next question. Are we receiving value for money? Because in this current report, page 106, page 107 of the AG's report, very serious findings are made regarding the deficiencies, in internal audit, internal control function. There's a lack of leadership, a lack of governance, a lack of the ability to perform basic financial accounting, yet we are paying 7 million rand and we're outsourcing this function, but we're still getting these results. Two questions. One, when will we see the turnaround and value for our money? I can't see it yet. And number two, when will we no longer need the services of this consortium? When do we see value for money? It's not current yet. It's not obvious yet. When can we do without their services?
Chairperson, Honorable Ainsley, I had indicated that when we took decisions to change the outlook of that unit, given the weaknesses that we've identified, 2011-12, I can't call the date exactly, we appointed a chief audit executive and a chief director position. All along, bearing in mind that this report takes into account the period wherein there was an absence of effective leadership. Now, we did not want to do away. When we signed the new contract with the current outsourced service provider, the terms of reference were very clear. And I can assure you that the reports that are emanating from that unit provide us with a very incisive position of what needs to be done. This report will not provide us that. Hence, it shows the gaps. But in the next financial year, in the report, annual report, we'll be able to tangibly see what is it that is being given by the outsourced organization. From where we are sitting, we feel the outsourced killer contract is ready for money because there are clear contractual agreements and issues that we have addressed so that we should be able to have value for money in terms of what they are doing.
And
department.
When will we no longer need their services?
All I could say is that it's very early looking at the nature of the organization. We'll be able to determine that when we're able to resource everything, given the extent of the organization, we have 243 facilities where they reach by that.
I think, Commissioner, you have a contract with these people. Does it have a time frame? Is it 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years contract? 3 years.
3 year contract.
Okay.
I'm paying them, what, 7 million rand per year? How much are we paying annually?
Thank you, Chair. Lead started at 7 million. Lead started in the last quarter, almost last 4 months, up in the 11 for financial year, this financial year.
No, that's fine. So 7 million rand per year.
With an inflation assessment, so this is about 18.
Okay.
Can I deal with AG's report page? My session starts in 105, page 105. Now, still, 15 years, I think, into the implementation of the PFMA, we are still not getting things right. Annual financial statements are not being prepared correctly. There is no supporting documentation. There are 10 items listed there in paragraph 31. 10 items, 31, regarding material misstatements. Now, these are financial statements not for last year, not for the year before. This is current. So the excuses you gave earlier on when Mr. Singh had the discussion, I don't believe it can hold sway now. We are talking about current matters. Currently, there are still material misstatements. How is that possible? Where is the witness? Is it in the office of the accounting officer? Is it in the office of the CFO? But why, 15 years in the implementation of PFMA, are we still getting these misstatements regarding prepayments, regarding capital assets, regarding leases, goods and services, and so on? Can you just assist us in establishing where the problem lies? Is it again loads? No, I don't think it can be. No.
Okay. I think CFO.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Indeed, there were misstatements, and the problem is not in one layer of our structure, because if you look at our processes, they are decentralized up to center level. We introduced a mechanism in trying to mitigate this risk of preparing financial statements on a monthly basis so that people can do the culture of reporting. We're still picking it up. People were supposed to check on check. It's a main problem, supervisory problem,
human
management
problem.
It's
a main problem. Yes. It's like
only God, don't make it away with a human. Get some robots.
No, it's quite good.
But if you look, those items that the Auditor General has listed, indeed we agree with the findings. They are correct. In fact, before each other, we pick up the problem. And in seeing the weaknesses continually, we tried to introduce some measures in terms of being able to mitigate. But the other part that we have acknowledged, and we did sit down then with the Chief Audit Executive, in requesting him that when we prepare the financial statement on a monthly basis, we would request him, because we know the problem areas, especially across, because it's more manual. You don't draw, because they're not on an accrual basis as government, still on a cash basis. So there's no report that you're going to draw from us that will give you a complete accrual. There is a report you get for locking for accrual, which is for order payments, but for standards, it is man-made. For him to add value in terms of being able to pre-audit that, so that when AD comes, then at least we have that quality assurance being done internally. So we need to acknowledge that the internal audit, we're not trying to push the problem solely to quality assurance, but what we're saying in the current situation, you do need all rail players to be able to do that kind of an exercise, rather than for us specific as agents taking proactively so on a monthly basis to have that. But in the year under review, it didn't happen. In 2012 setting, I must admit, as much as we had requested that it should happen, we even said, given their resources and the consultant resources, they can even do it quarterly, but with a target as they do on a monthly basis. I did sit down with them and explain the whole process. But what now is happening is some notes that are busy with for 2012 setting. So, personally, where I'm sitting, I am not even going to pronounce and say for the 12 setting financial year, you will be able to see a cleaner process. You might still have those instances, but majority of finding the people not reporting, what is the regular experience? We've got a framework, we've got registers.
What happens when people don't report and you end up with this kind of...
You see the problem is that it's very difficult sometimes to come to grips with this department, because I'm looking through the scope resolutions of the hearing we had last year with you. There are 13 pages, the scope resolution, from page 88. We raise the same problem. Your approach to our questioning is the same. We acknowledge the problem. You give us the assurance something is done. You tell us about an action plan. That's the recipe of the answers you give time and time again every time we engage with you. And I don't say, I have no doubt whatsoever we'll be getting the same answers again next time around. So what I'm saying is there's been very, very little progress in moving this department from a qualified audit to even close to a clean audit. Because we get the same assurances, same action plans, which appear not to work. And I think the Chair is quite right. What do you do about accountability? If people can't perform their functions, if they're not finding properly, if they're not reporting properly, what do you do? How do you hold them to account? Who am I asking?
No.
Sorry, I don't know.
No.
Was I making a comment? I don't know.
No. The National Commission is here to answer all the questions. To direct them.
Assurance year after year, Mr. Singh spoke of serial offenders. We get the same assurances every year, no progress.
Commissioner?
Honourable. Can we not hold the very senior officials more accountable and build into your contracts a clean audit next time or very serious consequences? not even a clean audit, come close to a clean audit. And so we don't have 13 pages of SCOPA resolutions, which are effectively ignored. Should we not build it into their contracts, check, senior, at senior management level? Achieve a clean audit, or whatever. Or whatever.
Honorable Ensley, I sincerely agree with you.
Which part?
Accountability. Accountability forms part of the criteria of any organization to redeem itself. I agree with you. Certainly, in relation to the concern that has been repeatedly raised of continuous qualified audits by the department, it's a concern for any person, especially at leadership level. But I must say, we take these concerns not laying down and as if nothing is being done. Perhaps my response will not be palatable in the manner in which I phrase it. If it doesn't, my sincere apology. What I'm saying is that with a huge vessel here, and this vessel needs to be moved, and it is us who must move that vessel. So there are two terrains around which you can move a huge vessel. If it's at sea, you'll be able because of the mobility and the flexibility of the environment in which it is floating. But if it's on ground, it is a huge responsibility, and that's what we are doing. We are on the circle phase. Now, why I'm saying this is precisely because the issues raised by the Auditor General, the SCOPA resolutions that you say were not flowing, it's an enlightenment that we need to be dealing with. But building capacity and turning the ship around also needs decisive measures being put in place. We have demonstrated to the best of our ability that we are not taking things lightheartedly. And we can assure you that what you request and aspire for is not what we aspire for as a department. Now, in all fairness, in all that we have done, I should think the Auditor General is here. We have put everything to the metal that we should be able to have a clean audit, but there are other things that we need to do before we can do so. One is the quality of people that we have at the lower level of the organizations who provide that information. Two, from a financial perspective in particular, taking into account from a macro perspective, the regional financial heads have to be people who are continuously trained and understand the fact. So if we don't understand that, which is the process that we are doing in the department, that we need to recruit people and train continuously, training forms part of the core of the leadership that we have here. Now we are saying we cannot speak on a sustained situation where it is an ideal. We need to have a timeline that says, when are we going to have this? The Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services has indicated very clearly in no uncertain terms that for the last 20 years, or getting to 20 years, the department has not had a clean audit. That does not make us happy about it. And that does not make us proud. Because we are measured against our ability to make things happen. But given the reality of the past, we should not put as the primary effort in issue. We should be looking at the effort that we are currently doing as a collective. The activity of CDC strategic management has indicated that we hold quarterly reports. But what you might not have answered conclusively is what the tells us, what do you do with the quarterly reports? Quarterly reports are a consequence of monthly reports that are escalating from the bottom. So by the time we have a quarterly report, we should have identified areas which we think that need to be filled. So these are the data that we as a department have identified as a measure to counterpoise the problems that we face. Certainly, as the head of the department, with the team that I lead here, I don't think the manner in which we have performed and the report does indicate other weaknesses. But we do also, as an organization, take that we have made steps in order to make corrective measures.
Yeah, you see, Commissioner, if you look at page 100, right at the bottom, action taken.
Example.
Monthly financial statements are compiled, reconciliation performed, and identified discrepancies rectified. If this was happening, then we would not be having what is in the Auditor General's report.
So we can quite correctly ask, and so what? Give an audit, and so what? It had no effect. But check, let's move on. The Commissioner is trying to give us the assurance that something is being done. Let's look at a specific example of irregular expenditure. Is irregular expenditure completely out of control? Say something's been done. I say nothing I want to use. Irregular expenditure is an example where nothing is being done. Is irregular expenditure? The AG refers to irregular expenditure on page 106 at the very top, item 33. And I'm asking the question, is it out of control? Is irregular expenditure out of control? You say doing something. What are you doing about irregular expenditure? Is it out of control?
In the manner the report reflects, it reflects it's out of control.
You agree it's out of control?
Yes.
I was hoping you would say it's not so I could prove it was. But let me illustrate. I'm going to illustrate anyway. If you search page 150, maybe National Treasury must tell us too. What do they do when admission is made that irregular expenditure is out of control? Look at page 150. In 2010, it was 800. Please correct my math. I'm not sure. Correct my math, sir. But as I see page 150, item 25. In 2010, it was 865,000.
Right.
2011, went up to over a million. Stop me if I'm wrong. Now we're looking at 215. What? Million? No? Am I right? Am I right? It's gone up 215% or 215 times since we last met you. So I'm pleased to say it's out of control as it is. From 865,000 two or three years ago to now 215 million in irregular expenditure. What does Treasury do about that? They must see these figures. Do they take action? Are they empowered to take any kind of action? Could they respond?
Yeah, maybe let's talk to the department. Let's understand what gave rise to this. Because irregular expenditure means procurement that did not follow.
Well, it means a whole host of things. Chair, if you look at page 151, there's very nice breakdown of incidents. There are 30 incidents there. So that will give you gives you a breakdown, I think, that you're asking for.
Not merely in terms of these specific incidences, but to say broadly, generally, what is the framework, and maybe what is the culture?
And you see no internal control at all when it comes to this. It's a free fall.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the frameworks, the internal control, departmental processes over and above what we have in your treasury regulations and the legislation, we have our own procedure as a department. They are there. In terms of the documented parcel, it's very clear. Well workshopped, well trained, and we do reviews as well. But in terms of compliance, our main problem is compliance. As I've indicated before, and it's perpetuated when the layer that is supposed to check doesn't do that part. Then you have it undetected because the checker doesn't do her part, she just signs, we've got people which is there, I was in some centers and pick it up. And they signature that someone has signed it and you interrogate to say, okay, you have signed this. In other words, you said everything is okay. And it's now that they frown at you, looking at you like surprised. And our major problem is that one.
Your major problem is you're not holding people accountable. Look at the very first thing there. Look at the incident there. Official received letters of reprimand. Look at the SCUSA resolutions. There are two or three cases mentioned there. Letter of warning. You're not holding people accountable. These people will come and repeat the offense because you are not holding them accountable. What's a reprimand? What's a letter of warning listed in the scope of resolutions? That's the action you're taking against people that you're complaining about. You're allowing them to get away with it because you're not holding them suitably accountable. It is your fault.
Are there consequences for people who sign without going through the documentation? Who frown at you when you say, but here is your signature? Are there consequences?
For all cases, it doesn't matter the thing, whether it is fraudulent. For all cases of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, every case must be investigated.
So what we then requested for all 11 drug cases, both irregular expenditure and reckless and willful expenditure, we requested internal audit. Because we said, it's one thing to have these cases reported, but ordinarily the region itself would have to conduct the investigation, or the management area it has to conduct the investigation. We requested an independent internal entity to do the investigation so that we are able to get a fair report and an independent report on underlying cause, and be able to deal with these matters conclusively.
So what do you have? Because now it's May 2013 and this report was compiled somewhere end of July, August last year. What has happened since then?
And you see, of the 13 incidents mentioned there, only one has been investigated and completed. The other 12, they are all pending.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Where are we now?
Why does it take so long? Some of these things don't require investigation. Some of them are so straightforward. You don't need lengthy investigations. Seems to me you have no stomach to hold people accountable.
No, let's see what they've done. They might surprise you.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Unfortunately, the internal audit has not yet come back with a report for all cases that they have to investigate. And had made follow-ups, I've written to them in terms of the request itself. It was not only...
This is a price, house, coupon, something.
Well, that is
the
you may well ask, at 7 million rand a year.
So they'll get their 7 million before they even complete the thing.
I'm running out of questions now. I'm going to start lecturing. So I mean, they are almost no more questions one can ask. They're observations. And it's just not good enough.
Can I clarify, Chairperson, what is... In terms of the consortium, we don't pay them up until they produce an acceptable report, acceptable to us as management. So they have not been fit for this exercise. And I checked with internal audit process in the
so,
new app. So they haven't been fit, and they haven't submitted.
So for this exercise, it will be an additional cost to the 7 million?
It's within that budget. It's within the budget, it's not additional to...
It's really in terms of reference within their scope. Okay, on the 30 listed there, I won't go to everyone, but can we have more information on number 2, deviation from bin processes, not now, but in writing as soon as possible. Number 3, payments made under the contract, exceed the original contract.
But how does that happen?
I mean, can we have all that...
Exceed no the contract by now. 6 million.
60 million. We want to know how that happened, who's involved. Who are these prohibited suppliers? Got that one. My number 5. Again, no declaration of interest. And these are mentioned, here on page 106 of the AG's report, where people working for your department are doing work for the department, engaging in their own private business interests. AG mentioned that on page 106. You listed here under what I call item 11 there, no declaration of interest. We would like to have more detail on that, please. And payments not made in accordance with regulations, 77 million. We want more detail on that, please. Can we have that detail? That's 5. Those are the 5 major ones. Can I move on?
Maybe comrades, on this 12.
13. Okay.
Yeah, that's
all 13.
Oh, yes.
I don't want to give you too much work.
I think let's just have detail. What happened? Who did what? Who are the officials in which area, region, who are the companies that were involved? Is that whole lot of information, I think.
Would you agree that fruitless and wasteful expenditure is out of control? Page 152. Would you agree that we've agreed now that irregular expenditure is out of control? Would you agree also fruitless and wasteful expenditure is out of control?
Or bad.
No, Chair. From 87,000 rand to currently 71 million. Unless my maths are wrong. Would you say this? Okay, maybe not out of control. It's extremely serious. What are you doing about it and what is the problem? And again there. 18 cases mentioned, not a single investigation completed. Why not? And some of those, you don't need investigations. If someone loses his key, and must have the vehicle towed away. I mean, why do you have to investigate that? Tell us about my number 11. 149,000 rand spent on people not attending training sessions. Why must you investigate that? A number of people were invited, you have a registered attendance, you take action against those people who didn't attend. Tell us about that one, non-attendance of training. Why do you need an investigation? You compare registers, and then you take action immediately. Chair, they have no stomach for accountability. And that is one of the root causes of the qualification. People are not being held accountable.
Can you talk to this
non-attendance,
fruitless and wasteful expenditure?
One thing just generally about it, what the problem is, what you're doing about it, and then specifically, let's use that as an example, non-attendance for training. Why do you think we require an long investigation?
Is the one we need to end in the non-attendance?
Yes, that's the one. But it might be the same, but let me answer Honorable Ainsley. The big draw card in the one that you have just spoken about, 37 million, 27 million in particular, I think we need to provide some leadership here. If you see the one of 37 million, that's a memorandum of understanding contract of this level agreement between the Department of Correctional Services and Department of Public Works. It's a process that is undergoing, that is ongoing with the Department of Public Works, and the meetings that we're setting, all of us to have a clear picture as to what the causes of that. With respect to the last one, 27 million, it's public knowledge that we did cancel the Triple P's 2010-2011, I can't recall. And there were motivations for it. All what needs to be done is to contextualize the wasteful expenditure in the manner in which it has been classified here. Because the Triple P's as a reality are gone. And Cabinet has proved that the Triple P's had to be cancelled given the nature of no value for money we're deriving from that process. What we might need to come back to SCOPA, in particular Chairperson, is to how then is this classified as a wasteful expenditure? What mechanism do we enter into with the National Treasury and Auditor General so as to be able to take this in that category? But these are the biggest amount of money that glaringly, not undermining the other numbers that you have mentioned, they ought to have been investigated and we ought to have responses to this. But that comes at the top of my head, that all these two which are glaringly huge, we need to have responses to.
Now, I agree with you there. Those are the big ones. But I can agree there. You did some kind of investigation. And that's a large proportion of that 71 million. But would you not agree with me there are some other ones on the list that you could act on within hours? Again,
just,
I go...
Just hang on. Like we said, someone's phone is on.
Now, I agree with you on those two big ones. They, I appreciate it. And they would... They form a large part of that 71 million. It's these other smaller ones. Surely you can act within hours. If I don't attend a training session, I should be disciplined the very next day. What investigation do you need? Losing my keys. Not cancelling a ticket. Those don't need investigations, surely. Yes?
Two colleagues would respond to Honorable Endless question, one from the CFO and the other from the human resource, especially from a disciplinary process, as to why. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. It does become important, yes, the amounts may look small, but it does become important that we investigate and that we discipline, and therefore we need to be fair to officials and giving them a hearing. And so that when we go through these sort of processes, we're not losing because we didn't follow our own processes. It's our own guidelines or the federal guideline that in respect to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, they must be investigated. So we don't want to also be found at fault in not complying in terms of the visas. I agree with you. The timing, it shouldn't also take long to investigate such matters as much as both parties have got to be heard in the matter.
Chairperson, National Commissioner, I think the point that the CFO is making needs to be amplified. The numbers that the 149 that are referred to there, yes, indeed, it may appear that the very following day you can start withdrawing the money from the official, or indeed even proceeding with the necessary disciplinary action. But if you don't investigate the reasons why each and every one of those 149 people, why they did not attend training, then you are also, from a labor legislation perspective, also treading on very thin ice.
I think don't take him literally.
I'm not saying no.
It's not literal action. It's merely saying, how do you speed up your processes? They don't drag on and on and on. I think that's the point. Not only on those ones, but on all cases.
As a general approach.
Because on the regular expenditure, I understand you have no report. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure pending investigation. Do you have a report on any of these? No. So?
Why not? Why did you come to Fedra to give us a report on those?
Well, because Price, House, Coopers, whatever, and Sikela, not Lake Arabel, Sikela, are still investigating.
That is not good enough. Honestly, it's not good enough. Lack of accountability is at the root of the problem. Let's carry on with page 106. Just one other item under expenditure management. Very disappointing, you're not paying your service providers within 30 days. Why is that? If, despite repeated cabinet instructions that you must pay your service providers within 30 days, and a scope of resolution last time, that effect, and promises and assurances you would do so, become again that, and you're still not doing it. You know how many small emerging black companies are going under because departments are not paying them as the law provides.
People get contracts regularly and you pay them regularly.
Or not at all. And then they go under.
Chairperson, honorable.
Last year we raised this, the year before we raised it, this year again we raised it, and you're still not doing it.
Honorable Angley, the issue of paying within 30 days is not something that is questionable. We need to comply with the regulations. I think it is important to perhaps put it into perspective. We do have a register as to how we pay our service providers, and we can provide this. And in the cases where we have not paid within 30 days, there are reasons. I think in the instance that is being referred to here, I will need to find out as to why, but in all instances, the CFO does bring reports to me on a monthly basis because it's a requirement. And I suppose this. Now, I just want to know, in this instance, it might be that we did not follow at that time. Because from the time when it became very clear that government departments across the whole spectrum are failing small emerging companies paying within 30 days. We have deliberately done, but on a contrary. I can
yeah, attest. No, that's fine, Commissioner. All I wanted to say was that coming here, you should at least have anticipated that I had some information that would say, out of all our contracts, we think our payment is at 60% on time, and of the remaining 20%, 80% of that is because we have weak systems, and the remaining 20% is because people don't provide accurate information, so that we're able to have fans, because the Auditor General correctly so will make a general statement, but then you must then contextualize it and say, yes, we're not complying, but this is the extent for non-compliance, so that we have a proper sense.
Thank you, Chairperson. For the year under review, 96.22% of our payments, all transactions, all areas of the department were paid within 30 days. It is 3.78% of all transactions that we didn't pay on time. In other words, we didn't pay within the 30-day period. 3.78% that we did not pay on within the 30 days. Within that 3.78%, the variations in terms of reasons, most of the reasons being overcharged by service providers. Service providers billing us even before they render the services. Remember the Trade Relation 8 is saying that you count your 30 days on receipt of an invoice. So here's the service provider, delivers an invoice to a correctional center, but the goods have not yet been delivered. Now the 30 days count. And what we have then said to the department is that on receipt, we stamp the invoices to the date of receipt, but when there's a delay, we said, write on the face of the invoice, or the separate memorandum, you write, but attached to the supporting documentation, write the reasons why you couldn't pay these 30 days. Be it of our own or reconciliation problems, because really, it doesn't mean because relation A says pay within 30 days, even if we've returned back, because those are falsies, that happens a lot. People deliver what it goes, we return them back, they delay in passing credit notes. But remember that invoice is counting. Either don't come and pick up, or we have now to arrange and deliver the goods back to them, say that this is not what we delivered as a department. And that does depend. Others deliver without us order. We have received those instances. And that's
the without you order.
Yes, yes, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, a traveled an example of coal coming after hours to come and deliver in center that has not ordered that particular truckload. And now, remember, the person at the gate, what they do is to leave their invoice. Now, the system says, you capture, just you query, capture what you have said. Well, if it is the same to go to issue an instruction and say, don't capture if you suspect, then we lose the internal control. So it's going to be a breakdown. Genuine cases will fall within the crack, and those that are not genuine will not be able to pick up. So we said, you capture, it doesn't matter your reason. But then you follow up where there's discrepancies that you can rectify other instances in terms of government departments, what we do, like your national health laboratory services, where we get a lot of problems. What we said is that you give us authority if you agree that you have not built us properly in terms of the specimens that went to the laboratory for inmates. Then give us authority through an email so that we can pay the correct invoice rather than to wait for your new invoice. So we are trying to invoice, but you need to be specific to these different areas. For example, my public. I was waiting for an invoice of 62 million. We had to return it back because it was inaccurate. We want to pay, but I cannot pay an inaccurate invoice because I'm afraid that if I don't pay, you think that it's... I mean, we need to be cautious.
All right. No, so I think the point is well made.
Now we've got...
The only point of positive performance.
No, we're quite happy with that. 90-odd percent, well done. Chair... The only other item under procurement of and contracts that hasn't been dealt with under irregular expenditure, that's item 38 to 43, is again a question of item 42, of employees in the department doing work outside the department without written permission. Seems you still, that also arose last year when we met you and the year before. It seems you still do not have that under control, that people are still... work in the department are doing their own business, private business interests outside without written permission. Why are you not able to manage that, to control that? And could you give us some kind of idea of the extent of the problem? How many employees are we talking about? What percentage?
With respect to item number 42, some employees of the department perform remunerative work outside the department. All employees are by law supposed to request permission through the National Commissioner. And in the instances wherein this has not been filed with me, that's in a regular process. I'm saying here that from our perspective, something that might, because of people not being ethical, is something that I'm able to report to. But it's an instruction that goes out every year without contradicting ourselves that colleagues must, if they have in the past been to be remunerative work that has been duly recommended, that they should apply for it.
No, Commissioner, that's fine. But then when people are caught in a contract in those regulars and the law, what then happens?
Have you been able to identify the people that you're talking about and what action have you taken against
them? Chairperson, honourable members, in such instances, disciplinary action has been taken against the offending employees.
Has that happened?
It has happened, sir.
Can you give us an example?
We should be able to, Chairperson, to provide you with a detailed report of each and every instance where it's taken disciplinary action against such employees.
Oh, okay. So can we...
We can note that, Chairperson.
To what should just note it down.
Chair, we discussed internal control under Mr. Singh and Mangena. I haven't got much more. I will discuss that under the consortium. There's only one remaining question I have regarding internal control. At the finding of the AG on page, I'm sure colleagues have other questions, but my final one, bottom of page 106, item 53, you have an action plan to address internal control deficiencies, which at the time of the preparation of this report has not been implemented. Why is that? Department has designed action plan to address internal control deficiencies identified by external auditors. During the time of the audit, this plan was, however, not fully implemented. Why not? Despite the fact you've got the assistance of the consortium.
Thanks, Chairperson. We have sat down, I think it was in the audit committee, where we kind of discussed the gap between the services we're receiving from the quality assurance units. And to say, for us to be able to move forward, because we all know the gaps, it doesn't really add value for an internal quality assurance to go to a vendor and say this has not been done and leave that vendor untouched. So we agreed that all quality assurance units must proactively assist when you go to a vendor, you find that the assets are not properly recorded. Don't come just with the report that assets are not properly recorded. Pull up your sleeves. Indicate, well, there might be various reasons why, and we know some of these reasons, but in certain centers, especially small centers, what you would get is officials that work both in the facility and in support services. So they come air in the morning at 6 o'clock, they go to the facility, unlock, fit the inmates, and then they come back to offices later on. At 1 o'clock, the shift ends. So from 1 o'clock, do not have any support staff sitting for logistics, finance, and personnel in certain centers. So what we then said is that having acknowledge those gaps that we have as a department, then we need quality assurance that will be proactive, including internal audit. So though we started late in terms of that particular process, we started during April this year to go to centers, identified centers, to, as a team, in other words, finance, supply chain management, inspectorate, internal audit, to go collectively to this interdisciplinary team, to go to these identified centers and focus on areas that are of make us not to sleep, your asset management, your payment issues and all of that. And indeed, that's what you pick up as well as we've gone. I've got two management that I've allocated to myself, that's what I pick up, but we don't leave them untouched. If I pick up at the supporting documentation they didn't stamp properly or they don't have stamp, you go and buy a stamp now and you correct immediately the supporting documentation that should be corrected and can be corrected without manipulating the information.
Okay, thank you. Your colleague have questions.
Alright, Comrade Shimane, Dr. George, Comrade Val.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I've got three questions, Chairperson. The first one, if it will be in the form of a comment to check under the investigations and disciplinary cases that are pending. According to the commissioner, in terms of the response that he was responding together with the colleagues, it seems that prior to 2010, the department was in total disarray. And maybe one when just connecting to the response and to the this report and the previous report that we've had since 2010 up to now, it seems that so many people have done so many wrong things in the department, and one will want to establish whether there's still a trail of events that are happening between the leadership that was in the department previous in those previous years and now, the linkage between the staff that is still within the department in terms of the wrongdoing. Maybe if we can get maybe a sense of that from Commissioner. Can I go on, Chairperson? Or should we wait for him to respond?
Let's get this one to this one. Then I'll come back to you.
No. Chairperson, the answer is on the positive. This is reflected in the manner of the sitting that we have here. 2010, when we came into looking to the affairs of the department, the Chief Operating Officer of the Regional Commissioner, having assessed the strength and the capability of what she can pull through, we then brought in capacity from the identified potential to lead. Because pockets of excellence need to be concentrated in authority to lead. The Regional Commissioner of Free State Northern Cape, Mr. Mdisa, was brought into HQ to lead a very important component. Mr. Ms. Jolingana was responsible for development and care. which is critical in the core business of this organization. There were serious gaps in that field. In identifying that potential, they were all brought back, brought into the sphere of control and leadership. Mr. Mbisa, who is sitting here, was the regional commissioner of Free State and Northern Cape. He was brought in 2010-11 to lead a very important component of inmates who are incarcerated in our facilities because we needed to have pulse of feeling on the pulse. Now, that in itself meant that therefore there was a need of consolidation of leadership. We are not saying casting aspersions. There was a need for us to refocus and provide leadership in the organization in order to, for the product to be able to do a turnaround. The emergence of the leadership that you see here is a conscious decision to strengthen authority and leadership. And hence, the potential that we see is that with the change of dynamics within the organization, the change of structure, Mr. Jengana then became the chief operating officer. The span of command needed also to be able to be accountable, because the national commissioner could not be able to lead with a staff that is about 14 people. Some are strategic, some are operational. That's the conscious decision of saying, let's have a clear design as to what is operational and should have a full authority to lead. And hence, that's what we are saying. There's a complete shift, ma'am.
Okay. All right.
It's just a follow-up. What happened to the former national commissioner? I remember there were so many cases involving what happened. What is the progress report? Okay. Yeah.
Which national commissioner? There are former Mki, there's Ngovi, there's Peterson.
Mki. It could just be, I could be precisely commissioner. Thank you.
Honorable member of the SCOPA, I have no idea as to, he left there, the term of office ended, if my recollection is correct, of Mr. Mki. Beyond that, I'm unable to pronounce it.
Let's put it this way. Yes. There was a report of the SIU that I think related to him and the former chief financial officer. And our understanding was that there were methods that were to refer to the police. I think she's talking in that context.
Chairperson, as an accounting officer, this matter has brought my attention officially and formally this year by National Treasury, in the presence of the acting CFO, because they requested a meeting which is unbeknown to me, to indicate that they needed to know what is happening to the report by the SIU. I indicated officially and openly that I have no sight of that report. If National Treasury has a copy, they should provide me with a copy and the contents thereof. And indeed, the report was given to myself. Now, with respect to the Gillingham, we can report here that Mr. Gillingham resigned. But in terms of the investigations that are being done or that were continued by the HOC, the SIU, that information still remains with the SIU and the HOCs. They have been in our environment, and we have no final report on finality on this matter. That's what we can say at this point in time. On the allegations that are preferred against them, it's a matter of investigation that I, as the accounting officer, have not been privy to the report.
Thank you, Mr. I won't rest my case on this one for now. It's fine, I'll rest it for now, but probably I won't rest it next time when we meet with the department just to check. Because I think it is in the interest of our voters who have put us into office. It was in the public domain.
So the department has no interest in terms of what is happening. What is happening with the transgressions that happened when people were under employment.
I want to assure this committee that there should be trust in what we say here. I, as the accounting officer, I'll not lead this committee. Mislead. What I'm saying is that for the first time it was brought to my attention. All along it has been talked that this report that the SIU has in respect. I was not given the copy of this report, neither by the previous administration. When this was raised with me, in a written minutes, I request National Treasury and all, give me a copy, which I can confirm I have received. Now, it has come to my attention that the allegations that are made against the officials mentioned in that report. I can also confirm that the Bureau of Strategic Management, CDC, Jenny Schreiner, who was at one point the acting national commissioner, has been liaising with the law enforcement authority, especially the SIU, and the Hawks. There's been interest as to what they wanted in terms of investigations that they given access into the department unfettered to do what they were expected. I can confirm that Ms. Marietta, being there for a number of years, the SIU or the Hawks have come to the department and requested documents. All the documents related to this matter have been given. But as an accounting officer, I've never had an official meeting with a law enforcement authority referred to come to me and say, this particular individual is affected. All I was informed is that there is a case, and as a responsible manager, I need to have documents at my disposal to peruse and be able to consult. On the basis of what I have received, we have therefore said, come back to us with evidence and evidence that we will not close the doors. Because if there is wrongdoing, let law enforcement authorities execute them and implement. We will assist them where
but
it is.
Didn't Gillingham resign under your watch?
Gillingham resigned under my watch. I should think I was about 4 or 5 months into the job.
When you were supposed to go through a disciplinary process.
Chairperson, as accounting officers with the different branches that I'd had to support in the National Commissioner to execute these duties, I listened to the matter and I was advised that that resignation was lawful and therefore he had a right to resign. And I could not stop resignation.
What?
Thank you, National Commissioner. My second question will go to, it's a follow-up on what Honorable Andy was asking. Some games, the consortium, the external service providers, is just for information. I'm just trying to think, because I know in most prisons, service providers are there probably sometimes to prepare food for inmates and whatever. Like when at some other stage when we went for oversight to the prisons, at some other instances, prisoners, inmates themselves were preparing their own meals. So in regard with this, I just linked it with the possibility to check on whether where food is being prepared by the very own inmates in other prisons. What is the extent? Is it, there's no any charge, there's no any budget in whatsoever in terms of payments to that regard. I just wanted to establish that. And if that's the case, maybe probably if we could get a detailed report on which prison does that happen, so that we keep in track in that regard. Thank you.
Chairperson, Honorable Chulon, the Correctional Services has 243 facilities, two of which are private. The issue of inmate and nutrition is key to any existence of such a facility, and given the nature of business that we are mandated to take care of. Yes, you are right. In the past, inmates used to cook for themselves as part of offender labor. The question that you're raising is that seemingly there has been a change in terms of outsourcing of nutrition. We have 8 management centers wherein nutrition is outsourced. It's insourced. Outsourced. My sincere apology. Is outsourced. And those 8 management centers, depending as to how you swing the pendulum and how we explain ourselves, but certainly we'll provide with a detailed report on this matter. Only 8 management centers we are outsourcing. And we'll be able to give a detailed report. All the other centers that we don't outsource, our own inmates are cooking for themselves. And I should think it's one of the things that we discussed in the last meeting here. With your permission, Chairperson, I don't want to belabor the matter. It's a matter that was topical, but we as a department have not shied away for us to provide responses that are adequate to give an explanation as to why we are outsourcing. And if that outsourcing is right, we'll be able also be be informed by the study and analysis that is taking place in order for us to have to complete and close this matter. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you for the response. The third question is also a follow-up on what Honorable Mangena was holding some questions. In relation, also I think it also touched on Honorable Ennis. In relation to the three determined objectives, linking them with your manual, the submission of reports through the region, to the feeding of reports through head office and the regional offices. In relation with the systems, your IT framework, because I remember when we had a meeting with you, with the department, I think last year, if not last year, 2012, it's also here in on the COPPA resolution. The department promised that you'll have an IT framework. And I was checking this page, and I just can't find it now, where it says, I think it has not yet been implemented. I think it's part of the shortcomings that the department is experiencing in terms of not meeting with the regulations and not meeting with the standard of the AG, as the AG is reporting. What is the problem? Why can't the department have your own IT framework that speaks to your daily needs in terms of what it's supposed to do? If maybe can get I know maybe it will also appear the next financial year, but maybe we can get maybe that is next year going to be turned around. But it's also National Commissioner, even the last time we met you.
Chairperson, I'll answer the latter on the IT framework, and then with your permission request the Acting City Strategic Management to pass elaborate on the predetermined objective as requested by Honorable Chiron. With respect to the IT framework, we can confirm here that we did not have that framework in place until we were able to restructure the department in the manner that we were able to get a result and be able to account for that important element. Now, the branch, Government Information and Technology, for a number of years was at a very junior level, hence the number of problems that we face in this respect. When CDC was appointed in 2011-2012, the first thing that she needed to deal with was restructuring of the unit itself, the branch itself, and also put in place an IT framework to turn around that particular sector. I can confirm here that we do have an IT framework, we do have an IT strategy, we do have an IT program that seek to address the problems and the constraints that we've had a number of years, one of which underpins also working with the Auditor General, the National Treasury, when LOGIS, for example, I don't want to bring this, when LOGIS has been fully attended to, it has to be able to dovetail to the IT architecture of the department. But we cannot blame National Treasury or any other institution, because you can also point your finger when you are able to deal with a matter that affect yourself. So we need to have a robust IT system in the department. And therefore we need to have a resource unit. The IT environment that you are referring to for a number of years has been a hunting field of consultants, and therefore we do not have value for money. And therefore starting from a lower base in dealing with this phenomenon. And I can assure the members sitting here that we are addressing the IT sphere as rigorously and as quickly as possible so that we could be able to benefit from the fruits of what we have invested in terms of recruiting people in that field. I would therefore request that Mr. Mkwena, the CDC, Mr. Rasteroka, I sincere apologies, respond to the predetermined objectives as Honorable Chilwane would like a response on.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Member. The system we're talking about is a corporate performance management system, which is actually supposed to assist us in terms of reporting on the predetermined objectives. That system was not put in place in that particular year, precisely because it now still sounds like a scratch record. But an IT system is an enabler. What really matters is the content of the information that you put in that system. There are challenges in terms of putting that system in place,
But I think going forward, we've come to a realization that as much as we would want to have a filtering system that we need to assist, you don't have the basics in terms of your planning, you don't have the basics in terms of the content of the information that you want to put in your plan, that system will be as useless as you can think of. So, right, when an organization has a conscious decision, however, at that point, it was the beginning of this guy that we have this system. Until the time that we fix our planning processes, we fix our quotient, we fix the relationship between our plans from a macro plan to up until the micro plans. And as soon as those are in line and in sync, then we can be able to say, therefore, we put in place a system. Currently, we are using the manual system where we actually collect data in terms of reports. As the CEO Emma said, that we actually have to communicate with agents and make use of any other tool that will assist us in getting information. But going forward, we want to say that we do the basics right. We're going to connect the basics to the plan correct, and as soon as we do that, and we are quite happy and comfortable that our plans are aligned, then we can have a system that actually can sync both planning and monitoring and reporting to be in line with what we want to achieve. Thank you.
The last one, Chairperson, is on I've just noticed that my document is not the same. I'm on page 104 on leadership. I just want to talk to the issue of item number 51 on leadership. I wanted to link it to what every member who spoke earlier spoke about it. It's 104. In my book, it's 104, but it's item 51 on the under leadership. Item 51.
Okay.
Yeah, where it talks about the key positions that were vacant. And I see here the National Commissioner in the delegation got only, I think Honorable Singh spoke about it, got two acting officials with him. I want to link it to the reliability of information. One of the aspects that the agent talked about was that the targets were not planned or not even monitored. And link it to this one of leadership. Because whether is it possible that could be the reason that there are so many vacant positions that the department is unable to monitor. Just to monitor on how effective are the plans and what you're supposed to achieve as a department. I'm just linking, I know it's not linked, but I think according to my own thinking, it's interlinked because it will really affect the work of the department on a daily basis. Just to talk to that one. I know that he did spoke about the acting, especially the CFO, and that coming in, which I think bringing in somebody who comes from a regional office to the head office also, it also affects the regional office also, because there's going to be a space that's going to be left vacant. The next time then the report will say at the regional, there's no reliability of information. And if need, we can talk to that one on how the department is going to make it possible that all vacant posts are filled so that we move forward. We cannot have 20 years that every year the department will come and appear to COP. We're not saying that only bad departments come to scope, but sometimes you might need to come and highlight how have you achieved it, even if it might take 20 years. Thank you,
Chairperson. All right. Okay. Chairperson, I'll give the responsibility for this response to the CDC Human Resource. But just a quick response. When I pulled Ms. Jolingana as a regional commissioner, to head a strategic position at HQ, immediately that post, there was no gap left behind. There was immediately filling of that position so that we don't leave things to fall within the gap, etc. The same applies to Mr. Melissa. So we're conscious as to what we're doing so that we don't create movement of people upward and we remain with the gaps below. But certainly Mr. Mugwena will respond on the vacant posts and the concomitant questions that are related to what you just said.
Thank you, Commissioner Chairperson, Honourable Members. I think earlier on we need to agree with what the Honourable Member is saying in terms of the correlation between planning where you have a depth of leadership in terms of the outputs from your play or the inability for us to plan properly, because clearly if you don't have capacity at senior leadership within various levels of the organization, it does, as a matter of course, affect your capacity in order to play. And as the CDC mentioned earlier on, it follows that if your plans are not proper, in essence you have started from a wrong footing, and therefore whatever that you'll be measuring subsequent to that process will essentially be flawed. But you would have seen, Honourable Member, from the report that there were great strides that were done in terms of filling of critical positions at leadership level, which in essence also brought in about necessary stability, which also assists the organization in terms of our planning capacity going forward. But what I do have to also point out that in terms of vacancies, that as and when they become vacant, particularly at senior level, once a senior member or at various levels indicates that they are intending to resign, we then post updates. We no longer are in that state where we wait for a person to exit the system actually before we post the advert. We understand that there might be legal challenges where someone will pay, but I want a cooling off period. I would want to come back. But as an organization, we can't be held to that. We need to have the ability that once a member indicates that they are resigning, we should be able to advertise those senior leadership positions. And that is what we have done. The challenge in terms of filling of position is multifaceted. It has to do with the manual process that we are utilizing as a department, because just the number of applications that we receive as a department in response. On the flip side, it does indicate that we are able to, we may be seen as an employer of choice in terms of expression of interest, but the challenge then becomes how you then process that. And in response to that, we are in the process of requesting for proposals to obtain any system to enable us to handle responses and an e-recruitment model, which would enable us to be able to process the applications as we receive them, because that is currently where the bottleneck comes in. Because once the applications are closed, you then run into challenges where these are the applications reach the roof, and the amount of time that we require in terms of conducting the shortlisting becomes then a challenge that we have.
You know what, Kumbhichulan, I don't think that the issue of vacancies is a fundamental problem that would lead to some of the challenges that we have. Because if you look at the briefing notes, I think it is one department that almost has everybody that it wants. So what the processes are okay, and we understand and accept them. But I think that that cannot be our area of emphasis and focus in terms of why we continue to have some of the challenges that we have. Because, So I think the issue of monitoring and management throughout the various levels and people being held to account is the fundamental challenge that needs to be addressed. Dr. George?
Thank you, Chairperson. I only have two questions. The first question is on page number 72 of the financial statement. It makes reference to the halfway houses pilot project in Natcharina. And then it goes on to talk about it on page 81, about this pilot project that would be evaluated, or that there was a critical evaluation done. Is this halfway house actually physically in place, and was evaluation done, and is it working?
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. Yes, the halfway house is indeed existing in Natcharina, and there has been an evaluation as to whether we need these halfway houses going forward, and the conclusion was yes, we need more halfway houses, but we are going the route of partnerships with non-governmental organizations also in terms of assisting to run the halfway houses.
Thank you very much. And then my final question is, the link of correctional facilities in my constituency, and I've been around on the grounds because there's a school there.
And there was a lot of noise about people living in houses that are not correctional services staff, and they shouldn't be there. Now, I just want to know, from an asset management perspective, do you know who is occupying those houses on that property? Thank you.
That's a very important question, Chairperson. We'll not skate around it. The colleague sitting here will recall we met in Durban just when I took office. We said we needed to do an audit of our facilities across the whole spectrum as to who stays. We have 240 facilities. Some of these facilities have officers' quarters in them. Now, for any good governance and also accountability, we are busy with that process. LOCOP in particular is one of those facilities where we are conducting that audit as to those who reside in those houses are correctional services members. Yes, we have a school at LOCOP, and that school is part of the asset of the government Department of Correctional Services. So we have a social responsibility to our own members in terms of having an educational center there. But as to whether there are people who are not members of correctional services, the last time I can confirm this, there were no complaints of non-DCF officials residing on that facility. But we can go back and do a continuous audit. But I can confirm we did that because it was a concern that we registered. But we don't want to have a situation wherein we have residential quarters wherein non-members of correctional services. This was sparked up by the regional commissioner of KwaZulu-Natal, who said in the past in Devon Westville, there was a case in the past of an escape, only to find out some of the people sitting there were not correctional services. Some had retired, and they were no longer. So we, that matter has been dealt with.
Well, I think, Commissioner, I don't think even Dr. George would be entirely happy with the response. Because we ourselves here, parliamentarians, there is this continuous tightening of the system by public works to ensure that those who stay in the parliamentary villages are members or their immediate families. But I'm not getting a sense that the department is actively pursuing that program process to ensure that those who stay in those officers' quarters are actually people who... I must talk to the commissioner, but if he's being engaged, then I should allow him the space to listen to what his colleagues are saying.
My apologies, Chairperson.
Yeah, I'm saying that there is need for that process. I don't think that Dr. George. I don't think that we got a satisfactory response that says yes, we're on top of things. We are cleaning out. We are putting measures to make sure that. The right people stay in those places. Alright, King Mange Nasal, you still have a question, and then we'll wind it up.
Thank you, Jim. Mine won't probably require an answer now, but just questions on the financial statement. I'd just like to maybe then to write to us and tell us why on page 142, travel and subsistence, almost 100 million rand increase from one year to the other. Particularly on local, from 178 million to 275 million. And maybe we can get some answer to that at some stage. And then also, you see, when you put on other operating expenditure, you put other. Now, other is from 15 million increase to 65 million. You pick that one up.
I'm looking at
page 142.
Oh, 142.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Okay, no, I was looking at the...
Travel and subsistence. I just noticed 100 million rand increase from one year on to the other. And then also on 5.8, 50 million rand increase on other. See, other things can be hidden under other and that kind of thing. And then also...
Where do you travel?
5.7.
5.7. Oh, okay.
You got it. So maybe they can provide answers some other time on that, if you can. And then also on the contingent liabilities. It's a bit worrying, page 168. There's almost 1.3 billion rand of contingent liabilities, and largely due to body injury and assaults of almost R1 billion. That's a lot of money. And if you can just tell us, you know, what interventions are there in place?
Where are your contingent liabilities at which page?
Probably 168.
Maybe think it's
168. 132, the first one, and now 168.
Thank you, Chief. I think two of the questions we can answer right now. The one is on travel. Travel is not only the normal subsistence and travel in terms of the synthesis of travel, like we are here, the kilometer of 12 kilometer travel to travel. But it also is the running, the operational cost for the government vehicle. If you recall, in 2010 we bought a new fleet to edit our fleet. So hence the expenditure went up because there was quite a number of cars that we bought as a department in adding to the fleet for operational reasons in center level and also at management area level. So that's why then the huge jump is the size of the fleet that increased. And then in terms of the other, the breakdown, Chairperson will respond in writing just to break it down, what comprises other. Limited to, remember, the framework from Treasury that we adhere to, but we can unpack that to the committee. The last one on contingent liabilities, as the word contingent, it may not, depending on the outcome of the case. So what normally happens, the 1 billion that the Honourable says, is referring to, is the opening balance. So that those were the contingencies for the 2010-11 financial opening balance. But if you look at the next column, the third one, liabilities paid, reduced, and whatever, it went down. So current, at end of March 2012, the balance of 417 million. So what happens is that sometimes we get the sum, but people don't follow through. Normally from inmates, they don't follow through. When they prescribe, they will cleanse the database, so this means they're no longer wanting to take further in terms of the legal processes. But the figure is at end of March was 417 million.
But this issue on bodily injury and assault, it means it is so common that a person can pretend that he or she was assaulted.
Yes, Chairperson, it is a common one in terms of the summons that you normally receive. But there was that one case that was in Limpopo of a summons that was about 2 million. So one inmate was claiming it is someone 902 million. So it just blew the whole category.
Okay.
It's not many cases, it was one.
So that's the pain and suffering, 12 million. All right, I hope none of you comrades here visit become guests of Memane.
Thank you. The next one. You know why Chairperson want the minister or the deputy minister to be here? It really worries me because when there are such things, it becomes a problem. He is not there. At least if the minister himself was here and let the deputy minister go to that KZN occasion, I think it would have been better. I mean, they can't go there because of them. One of them should have been here. So that when the officials are talking, they should be listening to what they are saying. They should be listening to what we are asking. Because really, to talk about issues of 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, it's really out. We are not supposed to do that. Number two, Chairperson, the department, how much did they pay for this book, for the annual report? It's a nice thing looking at it and the pictures. I think I'm going to cut out of some of them out, paste them in my album. But really, this document is falling apart. It's nice looking at it, but when you just page a page, it tears off. You see what's happening here? Yeah, I'm going to cut it out and give it to him again. Next time they should look into the way how to bring this. Now,
that's the same problem with Home Affairs last week.
Yeah, they come with nice things here. And then the SASA, are they still within your payroll? That is the other one. The issue of giving remand detainees uniform, it is not really a problem. Because that's why some of them are running away, because they meet with the old, the sentenced ones. I believe there are times they play ball and then soccer, and then miss them. And it's where they get the sense of running away. Can't we have some means of seeing to it that they are not given a uniform? They know they were arrested. And then the cell phones, I'm worried about the issue of cell phones. You know, there was one time when I was talking to Honorable Smith about this issue of cell phones. Because I'm such a call. I received a call. I don't know where that person got my phone from. But the person was asking me to send him a time. I said, time? Where are you and who are you? And then he told me who he was and where he was. And I asked myself a question. Yes, but the cell phone. And these cell phones are the ones that are making them to call you people outside. To make sure that even if they are inside. That's why hate is going on. Because those who are inside are telling them what to do, and those who are outside inform them what they are doing. And that's why when they come out of jail, you find that the person is rich. Because they have been stealing them in jail because of the cell phones. People, take care of the cell phones. Right. Thank you.
So, well, Thank you. Just pull the mic closer to you. Must not be far from Kimberley. Just bring it closer to you.
Okay, I just want to refer something that Honorable Talwani was said, the reason why was the DJ left to other department,
CFO.
The CFO, was referring to another department. You see, it becomes normal now that someone is in the department and then he make a mess. I don't want to use that other words. He make a mess, and then before he was getting penalties or whatever, or face a case, he were referred to another department. This other department never asked questions. Why is this person coming from your department now to us? There must be some communication, otherwise there must be a policy to change these things, because most of the departments come here and then you ask, where is the person? It's in another department. That is not, we will bring us nowhere, Chair. Every time when I do something, I go to correctional services. Now I'm safe there because they can now say it's me. That is a serious one, Chair. The Chair, what I also find is there's no entity in correctional services. But when I check on page 81, and I check on page 133, compensation of employees, goods and service, buildings and other fixed structures. The same thing is on 81, and the same thing is in 133 with a word of what changed. So maybe the Auditor General cut and paste that one. But we must also check the kinds of things. You can't, it, on that page, you refer one letter of a sentence change in the other, in the other sense you change something like the other one here is the prisons in Syria and San Renzo, which we were talking about the previous time when we were here. There was it was told to us that there will be penalties about this service providers. How far is this process with the service providers? And we are still waiting for the names to the service providers who are not finishing this work or do the poor work at its correctional services. Steps in my last thing is on 107. number 63, the fraudulent of on the South system. I like to know. There's in any department there's someone specific who's working with the salaries in the South system. How can anyone come in and do fraudulent on the payment of the salary? Who's responsible for this? How far is this process? And how did it happen? Okay. My last thing, I just want to refer to the telephone call that Honorable Mangena was raised. I was sitting here and I thought last year we go into an oversight, and when we get it, one of the prisoners, they were so strict with us. Even it looked like we are the visitors of the inmates, because we have to left our bags, our cell phones, anything in the wall there. And there was someone standing at that security gate. And when I think go off, you must go back, and you must put off your jacket or whatever. But nowadays, this system is also working for members of parliament, or is it, and it's not working for when people come and visit their friends or family, and they come in with a gun and a knife, or what kind, how did the system work when we are there, but when there's other members coming in, a gun will go through that thing, and a knife will go through that thing. Thank you, Chair.
Right. I think the first point on the paragraph on goods and services, on page 81, it is the report of the accounting officer, and then on page 133, it is the notes to the appropriation statement. So I think it had to be the same. But maybe, Nishakuma, can we talk to the investigation 62 and 63 on page 107? Where are we? How far are we? What has happened?
Chairperson, thank you very much. With respect to the investigations which the Honourable is referring to of Van Rensburg and Ceres, those investigations are ongoing. Bear in mind that the facilities are under construction and the delays and the penalties consequent of that. The matter was brought to attention also by the Portfolio Committee due to the fact that these facilities were for upgrading. And the resultant effect is that due to the delays in their completion, it has an effect in terms of offender population and overpopulation in other, say, overcrowding. That investigation is taking place, and once the report is completed, we shall be able to share it with you. Now, with respect to the PEFA fraud, the CDC Human Resource will respond to that. Now, with respect to visitations that the members of SCOPA went to visit on oversight, the standard operating procedure that anyone, irrespective of who you are, you have to be, you leave your items at the reception. So that you don't allow cell phones or any other things that we may seem to be inappropriate in our facilities. So it doesn't affect only one sector of the society, it affects everybody. So we do such. But concomitant to that, I need to indicate that the installation of body scanning equipment will also limit the introduction of contraband in our facilities and also the introduction of unwanted items into our facilities. So it's one of the measures that we're putting in place. Because the cell phones that you're talking about, that you got a call from an unknown offender. One thing that is very interesting, if I can share this, offenders seem to have called telephone numbers for everybody. How they get this, I don't know. For me, it's a mystery. They have phones of people, but you least expect that you have a phone. But there is a pattern of information, but it's something that we have to limit once we introduce some of these measures put in place. But, Chairperson, I can assure you that we have made that commitment. And therefore it also goes together with training of our own officials.
Because
once we have cell phone jamming, we can do so.
They engage in corrupt practices. I think that should be the response to your question, that the fact that we were there and there were cameras, it has to be, but when we are not there and it's normal, then you have all the kind of things that happen there. Yeah. Can we, human resource, these investigations started to do, although, Commissioner, I don't think this should be limited to the PEPA system. Procurement irregularities, okay, maybe those are your internal, your irregular expenditure that will be getting subsistence and travel and fraud amongst others. So it means there are quite a number of investigations that are going on. Yeah.
Chairperson, we would want to put a request to provide a concise report in respect of all these investigative reports.
Note it down. Yes. And when we finish here, first thing, immediately after lunch, let's write them a letter of reminder to say the things you agreed to send to us are 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So that we follow it up. Yeah. All right. Comrades, thanks very much. Auditor General's Office, National Treasury, National Commissioner and your officials. From what you're saying, you're giving us a hint that this year might be the year of the turning point in terms of the qualification. Because if qualification is because of the assets, and you now have all the systems in place, we'll put our eyes there. Unless if new things come up, you know, you fix this side and then something crops up on the other side. But we will be eagerly awaiting the report. So that, like I said at the beginning, we can focus on one or two issues. That good correction would actually see us across the Red Sea, instead of just being everywhere and about everything. Okay, thank you very much. Comrades, tomorrow, remember the briefing. My office, M515. At half past nine. M515.
Thank you. I'm not going to be able to do it. Two seven. Give me another one. Thank you. That is very good. Yeah.